Blog Talk Radio.
Did a wonderful job. Can I say this
let me just with the end of the finale. What I will say is this, it is probably one of the most well-written shows on television. You know, Succession is so full of great one-liners that you have to go back and you're going, oh, what did they just say? Oh, that was hilarious. Oh, my God, that went over my head. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those shows, like, you know, and for those of you who don't know what Succession is about, it's about this family, kind of like a Rupert Murdoch, Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's daddy, who was a big kind of mogul and news and stuff like that. It's kind of like more Rupert Murdoch, because it's based on an American family, and their father's ascent to power, and which one of the children will take over the throne, or is it possible that the children can take over the throne after this? You know, they think of them like Rupert Murdoch, okay? They own all kinds of film, news, television, all kind of stuff. Oh, my God, great show. And we're introduced in this show to Succession, which is the main I always have to pull. We're introduced, when we first introduced to this show, season one, the father is dying or is near death, right? And he makes a miraculous comeback. And within that comeback time of his wellness, we're looking to see, it's kind of like this thing for who's going to take over after this father retires or passes away or whatever, but the father's back and he's at the helm when we see it first season one. But at the end of the last season, season four, at the beginning of season four, after about maybe four or five episodes in, we see Logan Roy, the patriarch, the head of this family, die, leaving his four children, which is Shiv Roy, Roman Roy, Kendall Roy, and Connor Roy, okay? And the first Connor Roy is kind of a detached son. He's the oldest son. He's by a previous marriage, but the show tends to focus on the pursuits of the three children, Kendall Roy, Roman Roy, and Shiv Roy, okay? And so we are all trying to see, like, how these people live and how their father affects their lives and where they're going to end up. Like, what's going to happen? Are they going to get over it? Are they going to get, who's going to ascend to the throne? I think a lot of us had an affinity for Kendall. But at the same time, I think, you know, I kind of knew that Kendall probably would not get it. And boy, this Succession, I mean, did they take us on a ride. The last hour and something of Succession, they took us on this emotional ride with these four dysfunctional children and the people that surround them about who would succeed and take over AGN, an outsider come in and buy the, because that's what they were trying to sell to an outsider. Kendall was trying to stop it from happening, and he wanted to ascend. And in the end, we see, you know, them sitting in the boardroom. They've decided that they're going to let, you know, everybody's decided that Kendall Roy. Well, let me go back. Let's start about the funeral. The funeral to me, Logan Roy's funeral, which is the most powerful moment, one of the most powerful moments in Succession to me is Logan Roy's funeral, okay? His brother, who's had a lot of problems with him over the years, gets up I forget who the father is. I mean, the brother's played by. But he gets up and he begins to give, you know, the straight-up truth about who Logan Roy was, and who he, and you know how they grew up. He gives you even he even tells some secrets about that the kids didn't know about how they grew up, and kind of gives you a picture of his background has a his background and where Logan Roy came from and stuff like that. But he also talks about the bad, a whole lot of bad things about him, and it puts kind of everybody in shock. Everybody's sort of like, oh, God, you know, because Roman was planning on doing a eulogy to their father that, you know, was kind of like a nice eulogy. But after the uncle gets up there and he gives this bit of strong truth plus tells things they do not know, we know Roman breaks down, can't do the seems like he cannot, you know, finish, do the eulogy. And so who ends up doing the eulogy? Kendall. And Kendall but delivers a powerful eulogy. I just got to play some of it because I feel like you got to hear it. I think it was a dope. Because it says so much to the story of secession. And these questions we have in our head about these successful people who seem terrible. I mean, they're terrible. They're rich and horrible. They're everything you can imagine, right? But, and Logan Roy is the head of this bandit, this crazy bandit, and the, you know, this crazy bandit of a family and people that surrounds him. But I feel like Kendall puts puts who the Logan Roys of the world are in, he makes a great point of who these men are in the world. So this is going to be a moment where we play this a little bit, but hopefully it won't be long. So let's listen to this.
My sisters and my brothers, but yeah, I don't know how much I know, but I knew my father. You know, I've said it. I said it. And it is true what I said, what my uncle said. Yeah, my father was a brute. He was tough. Also built, and he acted. There are many people out there who will always tell you no. And there are a thousand reasons. There always are a thousand reasons not to not act. But he was never one of those. He had a vitality, a force, could hurt. Did. But my God, look at it, the lives and the livings and the things that he made. And the money. Yeah, the money. The lifeblood, the oxygen of this wonderful civilization we have built from the mud, the money, the corpuscules of life gushing around this nation, this world, filling men and women all around with desire, quickening the ambition to own and make and trade and profit and build and improve in great geysers of life he willed, of buildings he made stand, of ships, steel hulls, amusements, newspapers, shows, and films, and life, bloody, complicated life. I knew my father.
Okay, you guys, hold on. I'm having just a little bit of sound problem, so let me try to bring the sound so you guys can hear it louder. So hold on, let me see. Let's see if we can get it. If we can't, y'all might have to just turn up y'all your headphones. Y'all know how I be, this sound be acting out up in here. So hold on, let me see, hold on. Because I really want y'all to hear this from Secession, because I feel like it's, I got somewhere I'm going with this. So, okay, I'm trying to get it where it can get up here. See if I can get it louder for y'all. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to try to get it a little louder. I'm messing with the sound now. Okay, so this is Kendall delivering the eulogy of his father in Secession. I really want you guys to hear this, because what I wanted to talk about with this was the price of success. And, you know, I just thought... I found it just so interesting. Hold on, let me see if I can about this. I think my ideas changed about who I thought this family was after after hearing his speech. So I'm gonna try to. I don't know if it's gonna get any louder. So we'll try. Let me see here.
My sisters and my brothers, but
okay, so I'm going to kind of start it over. So if you guys heard it, if you guys didn't hear as well, it's going to, well, I'm going to start a little bit from the middle. Hopefully you guys can hear it, okay? So.
But I knew my father. You know, I've said it. I said it. And it is true what I said, what my uncle said. Yeah, my father was a brute. He was tough. But also, he built and he acted. And there are many people out there who will always tell you no. And there are a thousand reasons. There always are a thousand reasons not to not act. But he was never one of those. He had a vitality, a force that could hurt. And it did. But my God, look at it, the lives and the livings and the things that he made. And the money. Yeah, the money. The lifeblood, the oxygen of this wonderful civilization we have built from the mud. The money, the corpuscules of life gushing around this nation, this world, filling men and women all around with desire, quickening the ambition to own and make and trade and profit and build and improve. I mean, great geysers of life he willed, of buildings he made stand, of ships, steel hulls, amusements, newspapers, shows and films and life. Bloody, complicated life. He made life happen. He made me and my three siblings. Sorry. And yes, he had a terrible force to him and a fierce ambition that could push you to the side, But it was only that human thing, the will to be and to be seen and to do. And now people might want to tend and prune the memory of him, to denigrate that force, that magnificent, awful force of him. But my God, I hope it's in me. Because if we can't match his vim, then God knows the future will be sluggish and gray. Now, there wasn't a room from the grandest stateroom where his advice was sought to the lowest house where his news played, where he couldn't walk and wasn't comfortable. He was comfortable with this world, and he knew it. He knew it, and he liked it. And I say amen to that.
Okay, listen, secession writers, oh my God, if I could give high fives to all of you. You are the dopest writers on television. Listen, I have the words, how y'all use them, from when Rogan says my favorite line of this year, when Roy goes to see his kids. Remember when he comes to see his kids the night before he dies, and they're all trying to, you know, outbid him for this other think news thing, and they're arguing, and they're like little kids in some senses. And Logan Roy, the big bad dog, Logan Roy looks at him. It's one of my favorite lines. It's just a fabulous line, and he says, "I love you, but you're not serious people." I was like, oh my God, what the hell? I love secession. I loved every moment of secession and I love this funeral bit, because this to me is one of the best. It's been so many great lines throughout succession. But this often, you know, often when we look at people like the character of Roy, Logan Roy, and what he represents in the history of America, there's so much there. Like characters like him, because there are real life characters that represent people like Logan Roy, and you tend to, you have the Dale Carnegie's. I mean, you have the Rockefellers. You have people like, I'm forgetting the name. I don't know why it is passing me of the bank. The big bank, you have the J.P. Morgans of the world. You have all these great businessmen, and you tend to have, even in them, looking at these people throughout history in the lens of history, you tend to have a little bit of like, what a horrible people. I mean, what vow. I mean, do you care? And then you look at some, you know, today I feel like the new generation of millionaires, when we talk tech world, software world, and stuff like that, have just even gotten more wicked, okay? But when you look, not that Logan Roy, like somebody like a character like in real life, like the J.P. Morgans of the world, I mean, you know, everybody has questionable things, the Rockefeller, stuff like that. But when you look at the character of Logan Roy, he tends to represent all that history, the old school oligarch, business oligarchy of American, huge American business, corporate American business, the Rupert Murdochs of the world. And when you hear, to me, Kendall's eulogy, makes you see those type of people so differently. I mean, there's a part where, where's the part where Kendall says, let me see if I can pull it.
And the things that he, but my God, the sheer, the I mean, look at it, the lives and the livings and the things that he made. And the money.
I mean, when he talks about all that brute ugliness, things, but then you look at the things that he made, the people he trusted, the buildings he created out of sheer will. I mean, this is the character he's talking about, but you got to think about this, about the super wealthy, sometimes business people, complicated business people of the world. Not, there is never a reason. Let me just say this, okay? My personal opinion, okay? There is never a reason to be cruel or never a reason to be hurtful or anything. However, in life, people who tend to build great, huge things, big, huge monuments, they are so complicated. They're such complicated characters. They're so complicated. It's like even when you look at, when you hear about your favorite celebrities and stuff like that, you're like, just complicated. You know what I'm saying? Some complicated hell. But, you know, but out of that, like Kendall says, the sheer force, that doesn't give you an excuse to be bad. But I think out of all of that complicated, the will to embody creation and to create and to do wonderful things in the world and to make wonderful industries and stuff like that does not come easy, and it does not come out of perfect people. And I was listening today to a psychologist who was talking about, you know, because I was hoping for Kendall to end up, and what ends up happening is Shiv ends up, we all know, for those of you who haven't seen the end of Succession, I'm sorry, I'm about to spoil it for you, but Shiv ends up his sister. They all were supposed to get behind Kendall to be the successor to his father as the CEO, as the head of the company. And instead, Shiv, his sister, who at the last minute has this change of heart because she knows her husband, Tom, she's been working anyway on the side, you know, against her brothers with the guy who wants to buy the company. But when she finds out the guy who wants to buy the company doesn't want her at the head and he's going to use her husband as a puppet head, then she gets mad and she tells her brothers and all this stuff. But then at the last minute, we see something about Shiv that is sheer survival, and it takes me back to something her father said to her a couple of years before, and I can never remember the line, but when he tells her, because she's married to Tom, and you can tell she's not really happy. She's happy, but she's not happy. She's kind of not happy. She kind of cheats on Tom. Well, she don't kind of. She does cheat on Tom. She's just wild, child, right? And he says, you know what your problem is? You're afraid to compete. I mean, he just calls her out, you know, and we see in this moment, Shiv would rather pretend to be happy, pretend to go with a husband who's weak, who constantly at every moment he gets to exert his strength, stab her in the back, and she's willing to be like a trophy wife to him instead of, you know, seeing her brother. Now, some people thought seeing her brother ascend to the throne. Now, some people thought, well, you know, because she knew it would be bad for Kendall. No. And a lot of people consider all the children narcissistic. And that's what I heard the psychologist say, that she was talking about how all the kids were narcissistic. And she talks about Kendall. And she says Kendall is a narcissistic person that you feel sorry for. I I don't know if I believe that. I know that's what she said, the psychologist, and she reviews kind of ideas, and she is a psychologist, but she reviews ideas of, you know, the ideas, the mentality maybe behind this these characters. I didn't see Kendall like that at all. I saw Kendall as being, as a young child, he was told at 7 years old that he would become head of this company. Now, his father was, you know, playing games. His father was a narcissist. Logan Roy was a narcissist all the way. You know, he pitted his children against each other, all kinds of things. But at the same time, you see Kendall carry that very heavy mantle, but going back and forth between trying to somewhat touch a simple part of humanity, but then somewhat trying to go destroy everything around him to go for that goal of being what his father called him to be. I don't know. I see some narcissistic traits, but I don't know if I see him as narcissistic. And I just do believe, I always believe Kendall would have been good at it. Would it have maybe have eaten Kendall up eventually? Maybe. But I always thought he would be good at it. But we see in the end, Shiv sells him out. CEO becomes Tom. The character tech giant, I forget his name, buys the company, buys them. And we see Kendall just destroyed. We know that Kendall, I mean, to the point we think, because we've been watching this story of succession for 4 years, and Kendall's the next to the oldest child. And we see them literally, we see these three kids who have been, not the fourth one, because the fourth one, like I said, is kind of detached, the oldest brother. But we see these three, I would have loved to see all four of them in there, though, at that last moment. It would have been more interesting. But we see all three of them literally going at each other's throat, but we see them being reduced kind of childlike almost. And we see Kendall just saying why he should be it. I'm the oldest. And they're like, no, you're not, you know, something like that. It's just, and we see him just, all these things that he has fought for, all these things that he thought he was entitled to, or he thought he could be, it's gone. His sister sold him out. All the things he risked, everything, family, life, and limb, and everything for, it is one of the most heartbreaking scenes in Succession. And it just reminded you of the price. Now, most people would just say, hey, you can go on in life. You can, you know, you're still super wealthy. You can start another company. You could just see this loss hits him. It's just destruction, you know. And they were talking about on the podcast of the show for the podcast that there was a particular poem that, you know, that if you watch the session all the time, they take pieces of the poem every season or every show, and they use part of it to describe. And the poem was by John Berryman. If you know the story about John Berryman who killed himself, it's a story about, you know, he's a poet. But he has a very tragic life. I think after his wife passed, he kind of took on some guilt for that or whatever. But he has this poem that they used in Succession called Dream Song 29. And the poem is, here's the poem. It's like, there sit down once a thing on Henry's heart, so heavy if he had 100 years and more, and weeping sleepless in all them time, Henry could not make good. Starts again, always in Henry's ears. The little cough somewhere, an odor, a chime. And there's another thing he has in mind, like a grave Siamese face, 1,000 years will fail to blur, but still profile reproach of ghastly. With open eyes, he attends blinds. All the bells say too late. This is not for tears, thinking. But never did Henry, as he thought he did, in anyone, and hacks her body up and hide the pieces where they may be found. He knows he went over everyone and nobody's missing. Often he reckons in the dime them. Often he reckons in the dime them up. Nobody is ever missing. Now, to me, it's the first part of the poem that is describes succession, and particularly Kendall for me, because Kendall is, even though it focuses on all the children, but we do see this connect of Kendall being the second big story in succession. And it says, there sit down once a thing on Henry's heart, so heavy if he had 100 years and more, and weeping, sleepless, and all them time, Henry could not make good. Starts again, always in Henry's ears, the little cough somewhere, an odor, a chime. And it says, and it goes on about, but it's what they're saying is that Henry had, the story of this Henry is that constantly he was having false starts of trying to make good on something that he never could make good. And over time, it was just like he was repeating himself, and that is the story of succession. That's the story of Kendall. It's crazy. I loved it. I loved every piece of it. I thought succession was just wonderful. And it made you look at people like this who may live like this very differently. Like, because you, it's easy to talk about people. You know what I'm saying? It's easy to say, oh, what if they're what a bunch of, like, selfish bums or something like that. Or when you think about Logan Roy and you go, what a narcissistic, crazy man. But then when you hear that eulogy that Kendall tells so well about his father and all the dysfunction that was breeded out of this, but all the things that this man created that created industries. People dreamed about, he not only created industries, but he created things for men to dream about. Like men dream of being working for him or being a success for him. And all these things, this titan of industry, so complicated, so terrible, so many things around him. But my goodness, look at what he did. Oh, my God. How crazy is that? So I guess what I'm trying to say, y'all, is that the price of success, or not even success, because I feel like success is, how can I say, success can be relative. I mean, you know, it depends. You know, I've seen people who have all the big money, like even the Roys. The Roys had big money. I don't know if you could say, on one end, they were successful in the material world, but they weren't successful people, as spiritual people. And to me, my thing of success is to be, you can be successful. Like, I know a lot of people who are successful in the material world, to go to school, all this stuff and everything, but, you know, they be like, you talk to them, you're like, Lord, child, they ain't got no common sense. They not very spiritually aware or aware or something like that, you know. So to me, that's not success. But at the same time, I feel like, and this is going to sound crazy. No, it's not going to sound crazy. I feel like God uses everybody, like even the most crazy people, the most complicated people can build worlds. The power of God's creativity that can blow through one person and do such magnificent things, you know what I'm saying? Yet they can be not the most magnificent person. So what I would say is the price of success, but maybe the price of purpose. I don't know. Is that right? I don't know. But the price of purpose is not always, cheap. It's expensive. And it could cost you. I mean, when I was thinking, when he was talking about Logan Roy and I was listening to his story, the story when he was reading about his father and when that you hear that whole eulogy and everything, and you can see it on YouTube. It's even more powerful to watch it, you know, on YouTube. But I kept thinking to myself about, like I talked about last week in the Bible about David, the King King David. And I was thinking like, oh my God, like think about King David. I mean, David was considering his lifetime a womanizer. Because, you know, David is a key, even though he loved God and he would dance before God and he would do all these great things, and David was considered one of the bloodiest kings, one of the greatest king warriors. But David was also the dude who was sitting on, you know, his ass at home. Now, I'm going to describe it like that. He was sitting on his ass on his throne, and he was looking, you know, he didn't even go to war when he should have been at war, and he was looking across the field, and he seen this beautiful lady, you know, and it was somebody else's wife, right? And he might have been trying to show off, too, a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Bathsheba, okay? And so what'd he do? He went and got Bathsheba, and he got with Bathsheba, right? And Bathsheba got pregnant, okay? And to cover it up, he sends her husband to cover up the pregnancy and everything. What does he do? He sends her husband out to the front lines of the war, knowing he's gonna get killed, so it wouldn't be found out that he was, you know, he done messed around with the help fight. I mean, one of his warriors, right? So, I mean, David ended up marrying Bathsheba, but he ends up losing that first child because of it. And David's life, even though David loved God and did a lot of things for God, but David ends up having turmoil in his family, all kinds of things. And then David, you know, who hoped to build the temple for God, the prophet comes to him and tell him in the Bible the story, because that's what David wanted to be his great purpose. And the prophet says, you are not going to build the temple. Your hand's too bloody. And David's like, what? You know, yo, like, I did all this stuff because God wanted, I thought that's what God wanted me to do. But David didn't, his purpose, he was a war king, so he couldn't build that temple, but his son would, right? But what you see in it is such a powerful, complicated story. Because he was a king. And it wasn't always, you know, rainbows and, you know what I'm saying, and angels and everything. David was considered a friend of God, but David did some foul stuff. David was foul. He was foul. Just like Logan Roy, you know what I'm saying? Except for Logan Roy, I don't know if he ever got any spiritual, you know what I'm saying, guidance or something. But I guess what I'm saying is the price of purpose, David's price, the price for his purpose, sometimes took him into some dark places and through some dark tests. Okay, now on the spiritual tip, David overcame his things. Because in the end of life, David learned how to be spiritual. Now, with Logan Roy is a different stuff. But in the character of Logan Roy went through dark places and everything. But if he hadn't had those dark tests, can somebody really be a titan of industry? Can they build such powerful things? You know what I'm saying? Just think about it. I mean, it makes you how you think about certain people differently, the pressures that people face, the different types of pressures, the different types of what does it take to be an Elon Musk, a Jeff Bezos? You know what I'm saying? Like, no, I'm talking about real titans of industry. You know what I'm saying? And it complicates things because these are not easy people, you know? A Robert Johnson, like BET, you know what I'm saying? I got to say Robert Johnson, because some of our titans are fake titans. You know what I'm saying? Y'all know what I'm saying out in these streets, you know? But what does it take? It takes a lot. And that's what, my thing is, if you get anything from Succession, and this is to wrap it up, and it's a word this week, okay, is that purpose pause, wanting to be, when you say you want to be something, count the cost. This is my favorite, one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible is when God said, when Jesus said, a man does not build a house before he considers the cost. Woo. You got to consider the cost, baby, because it's going to cost you whatever. It's going to cost you to sit on your ass, but it's going to cost you to build. And in the end, like he said, you think about the story of succession. He's talking about the end of this great titan's life. He ends up, but there's that cast that's in there. He's like, he said, my God, I hope that whatever he had, I got it. Like, yeah, he was rough. He wasn't no joke. He could be mean. He could push you to the side. But, damn, he was creative. Look at what he's done. Look at the force of these industries he's built. Look at all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Look at how powerful. Now, you can look at it two ways. I'm telling you, it's two ways. Because it wasn't, to me, he wasn't a spiritually sound person. And to me, what good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? So you got to think about that. If something's going to cost you your soul, it ain't worth nothing. You can gain, like he said, it wasn't a place his father wasn't comfortable at. In this world, he was good with this world. He was comfortable in this world. He was worldly. So he wasn't a spiritual person. He was a worldly person. You know what I'm saying? That's different. I'm just saying, for a spiritual person, you got to think different. That don't mean you can't be a titan of industry, and that don't mean your life won't be as complicated and as jacked up at some points as Logan, somebody like a Logan Roy. But the difference is with you, you spiritual. You know how to check yourself before you wreck yourself. You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying to y'all is whatever it is that you want to build, whatever it is you want to go for, whatever it is in your life that God has called you to, or whatever purpose it is, whatever, I don't know, whatever dream it is, trust me, it's going to cost. I always say this on this show. I always say it. I feel like it's like a constant, it's like a thing. You know what I'm saying? I remember one night I was looking at Chris, that dude that used to come on CNBC, and I've often told the story on here. I forget, he's one of the big business guys, and he had all these millionaires sitting around, and they were talking about, how they became a millionaire. And this one guy, I forget his name, he just said, hold on, let me just stop it right here. He said, I'm going to have to be honest with y'all. He said, it's not one of us that it hasn't cost us something. And he said, it's cost us marriages. It's cost us families, it's cost us time, it's been our sheer life force to do what we set out to do. It's like, jeez. Story of succession, I see that same thing, especially with Kendall. Kendall, in the end, he spends it all on this dream. Not that, listen, what, keep in mind what I'm saying. Now, to lose your soul, you don't want to lose your soul over nothing. What good is it gain a man to gain the whole world but lose your soul? But understand that even if you become a titan, you must have spirituality to guide you, because you're going to face some dark spaces. It does not mean it ain't going to be easy. Whatever your purpose, whatever you tend to go hard in, it is going to cost. And that's all I wanted to say. That's what I wanted to round up Succession with. If you guys have not seen Succession, I tell y'all, go check it out. I mean, I don't know if they run it on, Showtime or not right now. I don't know if they doing that, like running all the seasons. But definitely, I think this story is such a tale, and I think that it's a powerful tale when you look at it. And shout out to the writers of Succession, man! I love some dope ass writing. It's nothing like a dope ass writing. Boy, when you create dope writing on every side. Loved it. Okay, so I hope y'all got it. I hope y'all get y'all It's a Word. I hope y'all understood what I was talking about. I know I was everywhere, but I just really wanted to say that tonight, because I thought that, and I really want y'all, if y'all get time, to take a listen to the eulogy thing. I thought that was very powerful, just about the sometimes the ideas we have of figures, huge figures, and who they are and what they represent in the world, a lot of times we look at them and we think bad stuff, but we don't often think of the cause to be that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a lot I wanted to talk about that, okay? All right, so also I saw this week, I don't know if y'all seen it, Natalia, have y'all seen that show about Natalia Great Child? That little midget ain't the right word, because y'all know y'all be politically correct out here. Little people. Natalia Grace, if y'all have not seen the story of the Natalia, I don't even know. First, let me just say, I'm going to just say this, because you can't, here's what I'll say for me. I didn't like the documentary that ID Channel did. No offense. I love the ID Channel, but I didn't like the documentary. I felt the documentary was kind of skewing towards one side, and I felt like there was no easy answers for this story. But this is according to People magazine. It's Natalia Grace, accused of being a sociopath by adoptive parents, says allegations are not true. It says Natalia Grace, an orphan from the Ukraine, accused of pretending to be a six-year-old girl, tells her side of the story in a new documentary airing on ID later this summer. Okay, so it was her side of the story. That's why it says Natalia Grace, an orphan from the Ukraine, was accused of pretending to be a six-year-old girl by her adoptive parents, is telling her side of the story in an exclusive clip obtained by Entertainment Tonight this week. Natalia addresses the allegations made public by Michael and Christine Barnett, an Indiana couple who have claimed Natalia, who has a form of dwarfism called spondylopiphyseal, I don't know, I can't say that, is a sociopath and a con artist who is actually an adult woman with sinister intentions. This is my side of the story, and I'm going to say what happened because I never got a chance to say what happened, Natalia says in the one-minute clip, which is a preview of what will be featured in an upcoming two-hour investigation documentary, The Curious Case of Natalia Grace, Natalia Speaks. Okay, I'm hearing all this stuff that never actually happened from Christine and Michael, Natalia continues. It's shocking, it's frustrating because that's not true, and people are believing what Christine and Michael are saying without even hearing my side. The Barnetts, who adopted Natalia from the Ukraine in 2010, believing she was a six-year-old orphan, claimed she was an adult masquerading as a child when they took her in. Then alleged Natalia tried to harm them and their biological children during the 2 years she lived with her adoptive family. Natalia was accused of trying to poison Christine's coffee, kill her by dragging her towards an electric fence. Natalia was also accused of placing a clear thumbtacks on the stairs face up so that they would step on them. In 2012, the couple petitioned Marion County Probate Court to have her age legally changed to 22, changing her birth year from 2003 to 1989. The following year, Michael and Christine moved in with their three sons to Canada without her, leaving her alone in an apartment in Lafayette, Indiana. The Barnetts, who later divorced, were charged with neglect of a dependent. Prosecutors couldn't charge the couple with neglect of a child because of Natalie's court-ordered age change. Michael was found not guilty of three counts of neglect and a conspiracy to commit neglect of a dependent in 2022, while Christine's charges were dropped earlier this year, according to the Associated Press. Okay, now this is an interesting three-part docu-series you can see on the ID Channel. Chad, I watched it. Let me just say, I think all parties involved are crazy. Okay, Natalia, her two parents, maybe the mama in the Ukraine. This is Carlotta 101 theory, okay? Now, first of all, Christina and Michael, was that his name? They was kind of special, okay? You know what I'm saying? I ain't saying they an animated type of couple and stuff like that. But sometimes you just draw karma. You know what I'm saying? You draw stuff to you, and I think Natalia might have been they stuff. You know what I'm saying? Now, Natalia, when she came to them, she had a form of dwarfism, but a lot of people thought she looked older. Even, like, when they start off the program, this woman, one of the women, she has a daughter who was supposed to be the same age as Natalia, who was suffering from dwarfism herself, okay? They brought her over to play with Natalia. Natalia was way bigger than this girl, okay? Yeah. And they were saying Natalia not only had pubic hair at 6 years old. No, we're going to talk about it. They said she was on her, she was having periods, and she would be throwing, like, the blood, she'd be throwing stuff out the, like her, she used to put socks inside her thing when she was bleeding and throw it outside the door, and they found some. A mess, child. Now, the documentary doesn't make any sense to me, doesn't go with too much. This is the part I didn't like. The documentary didn't go exclusively into medical records. We heard a little bit of a medical person speak, but that judge did not just make that decision to make her an adult because the Barnett said so. It was through a series of medical records, and I would have liked to hear the reasons they thought she was older. But no matter how crazy Natalia and Michael may have been, they thought they was dealing with an adult. Okay, they wanted to adopt this kid, but then when they got her in the house, they said allegedly she was playing with knives, showing up in their bed, at the end of the bed, trying to, with a knife in the middle of the night. She was trying to poison them, all kind of stuff, okay? Now, while I believe Natalia and them, the family was doing some, was mad at her because they wasn't, first of all, I believe they were special anyway, but I think that getting Natalia just expanded all that, and they was responding to whatever Natalia was doing. Now, let me tell you the reason I believe the story about Natalia is true, that she's up to the end of the day being with knives and stuff. Okay, let me just say why quite a lot of things is true. And she might. Now, see, I can't trust her mom over in the Ukraine because it took her too long to answer. And you don't know what kind of scams and stuff like that they be doing over there in the Ukraine, okay? You don't know. See, they need some real investigation, like FBI and stuff, to go over there to find out her real age and stuff like that before they try to put somebody in jail. But before they have put her in this complex, in this, the family, listen to this, okay? This ain't what, they show all this in the documentary. And then they try to erase it at the last couple of episodes, which I didn't understand. In my personal opinion, they was trying to erase it. But the family, once they thought she was an adult, they were scared for their family. They first sent her to a mental ward, okay? The nurses from the mental ward were calling into the store, the show. So were the other male workers. And they all were saying Natalia is an adult, baby. There is no way she's a young person. They were talking about how she would be talking dirty to some of the men, always trying to be a man. This is supposed to be a six-year-old, okay? Now, she could have been molested when she was in, or something like that, when she was in Ukraine. But, no, they said, nah, this was a grown A woman. It was people calling in who were from the mental facility, Sam. Mm-mm. Them people was right. And they were so crazy that Natalia was doing so much wild stuff in the mental ward that the people was like, y'all got to come get her. She too much for us. Okay, y'all see that on the documentary, huh? Then, so the family said, okay, they was doing right by her. They to me, they was kind of doing right. I don't know if they had no choice. I don't know. But they was still trying to put her up to me, even though they was trying to get rid of her because they felt like she was trying to kill them. Okay, so they put her into this nice neighborhood, very nice neighborhood at first, okay? And they put her up in her apartment and stuff, and they kind of have videotapes of them going to the apartment. You could tell they didn't really want to do nothing to do with her, though, after a while. Now, my personal opinion, you can't blame a family if they feeling like somebody got knives at the end of their bed and is trying to put pine salt in their drinks. It ain't funny, but you know what I'm saying? You can see why they like, this is a little bad kid right here, okay? So they put her up in this apartment. She's legally declared 20-some years old now, right? The neighbors start talking about her. The neighbors talk about how she would stalk them, how she would try to touch on the little kids in the apartment. Cause this was the neighbors at the nice apartment building that they had put her in. to the point they had to kick her after her lease was up. They had to kick her out because the people was like, we ain't gonna renew her lease. She been too much trouble. People, the neighbors was even, it was a bunch of them. They said, we ain't even know. Sometimes we ain't even know if we should come outside our house because Natalia be sitting on our steps and stuff. And then she even called the police one night on herself talking about, I'm stalking one of my neighbors and I'm scared of what I might do to them. Now, the neighbors knew nothing about the story. They didn't even know the parents that way, okay? But Natalia, they asked him, why you not live with your parents and all this stuff. Natalia was saying, because I tried to kill my mama. Telling the neighbors this. I tried to do this. I tried to do that. This is the neighbors in the first nice neighborhood they put her up in a nice apartment building. But she got put out of that. And so they went in the end, they put her in a trash, like a really horrible neighborhood and stuff like that. And so it was some other people in the area kind of starting to feel sorry for her. And so she was, to me, in my personal opinion, you know, they were saying she couldn't do certain things. It was a neighbor, and they called the child, I mean, they called protective, I mean, like kind of the abuse hotline for adults on the family because the family had moved to Canada. And they put her up in an apartment, okay? But the apartment, they ain't paying no attention to the apartment having effects and stuff, you know, special effects, probably because they was tired of her funky ass because they already had put her in a nice neighborhood, in a nice apartment, in a nice place, and she was stalking the neighbors, trying to allegedly stalking the neighbors. She did call the police on herself. They showed that in the documentary, allegedly trying to molest them kids. Okay, so then we get this group in Indiana who's like, Natalia's a sweetheart. She's too young. She's not this. She's not that. So suddenly her mama shows up out the blue. They do a DNA on her mama, and her mama says she wasn't born in 1989. She was born in 2000, such and such, 2001. I don't believe her mama whatsoever because it took her too long to come forward. The first time they tried to get in touch with her mama was trying to ignore the phone call. Said she was dealing with this for 17 years or whatever. I don't know, okay? That's what she said the first time, so it implied that Natalia was older. But then the second time, she comes up with some birth certificate and all this stuff. I don't know if I believe because you don't really know the Ukraine system. You don't know what they got going over there. You don't know if there's some scams going on over there. And going back to when the Barnetts adopted Natalia, the adoption agency calls strangely, and they, you know, they come and seek them out because they know they charity, they give to charities, and they give to adoption agencies and all this stuff because they had a lot of money, a little bit of money. So they called them and said, hey, we have this young girl. We know you probably be interested in adopting. But the problem is you better come pick her up by Monday or we're going to put her back in the foster home. It was almost like a threat, an ultimatum, like, you don't come get this kid, hurry up and get it, she gonna go we gonna put her back in the thing, the system, right? And her first family, the first family that had her, got rid of her, was trying to get rid of her real fast, because they didn't show up on camera, but it was something wrong, going funny with them, too. That's how the adoption agency got her, right? So you could tell there's some situations with this kid. And even a couple of the couples who was going to adopt her, one lady was saying, well, I hate that I didn't get her. You know, I feel like they were so wrong. I said, lady, you probably better be glad you got her because you was naive. But the one couple said they felt something was off, but it was something off. Okay, so when Natalia gets to Indiana, these people are calling the police. Because I feel like Natalia know how to snow people. That's my personal opinion. And so she snowed. She realized she made a huge mistake with the people in the nice town that her family had her in at first. And so she decided when she go to the new town, she going to snow them and probably get her family locked up, in my personal opinion. The Barnetts wasn't that smart anyway, and they was kind of loopy themselves, right? So, and they had issues underneath the surface in their own, you know, with themselves. They was kind of like fighting each other. The wife seemed like she was a little loopy. It could be mean and stuff like that. And the husband seemed like he was a little loopy and all this stuff. And so I believe they wasn't that sharp either. Okay, I didn't believe they were that great. But I do believe their stories about Natalia. And then the father, because they start fighting with each other, they get in a divorce, and so they're trying to charge them with child neglect problems and stuff. The father turns on the wife because he's just pissed at the wife. That's my personal opinion. But his story was very different several years before than it was coming up. You know what I'm saying? Now, Natalia tried to take them to court. They lose the court case because, you know, basically she was an adult. Now, my personal opinion is that the family, when they went to go declare her in court, I could never probably plead to make somebody feel be guilty for that, because when they went to court, went to court to try to get her age declared, they had evidence with them. They just walk in there and say, "Cause you making the cat this little kid we thought we adopted 29." No, they had to have documents, documentary, and the wife couldn't manipulate that. That had to be from doctors and people who had a suspicion of Natalia being a certain age. And to me, the documentary should have told us more, went more into detail what that was, okay? So to me, I understand that they left all that information out after the trial thing. But the father, the Barnett's guy, found not guilty, or the charges ended up dropped. And Natalia's still out here, supposed to be not as old as they thought she was. But I really feel like the Barnett's, they didn't adopt her, meaning it didn't seem like to me, meaning to do her wrong. They felt they got scared and spooked about this kid. So did the other couple, and they went to try to declare her. So to me, I don't know. I don't think they were coming from a place of we trying to make this kid think. I really believe something happened there, and I wouldn't have believed something had happened there except if it wasn't for the neighbors in the first area and the people at the mental ward all saying Natalia was very adult-like. Natalia was doing wild shit. Natalia was stalking people. And I wouldn't have believed it if Natalia didn't call on her own damn self for stalking somebody, saying she was about to hurt somebody, okay? So to me, Natalia Grace is wild. It's a wild-ass story with crazy people, got a crazy kid who's a person that seemed like a kid. And it's wild. So if y'all have not seen the story of Natalia Grace, child, y'all need to check it out on the ID channel. Let me see. I think they've been showing it on and off. And then they may have it on, you can see it on if you have HBO Max, you can watch it on HBO Max, okay? Just a really good, interesting story, okay? And it makes you scared because you're like, dang, you try to adopt somebody and you don't know what you're going to get out in these streets. You got to really be doing your homework when you do adoption, okay? All right. Okay, so when I get back, we're going to talk about Ja Morant and some more news, child. What was it? Something last week I was supposed to explain. What was I talking about? I think it was the relationship y'all asked me about. I'll talk about Derrick Jackson's wife. We're going to talk about her in a minute, child, so I'll save that. But we getting ready. I'm going to get ready to go to break. And, Lord, child, we got so much to get back out here. I hope I get all these news. We're going to talk about American workers are hating going back to work, child. They mad. They mad out in these streets. And we're going to talk about Ja Morant news. It seems like the NBA has found out a little bit more. What'd I tell y'all? Y'all gonna start calling me psychic out in these streets? Okay, so we gotta listen. We gonna find out about that. Plus, oh my goodness, what else? We got so much to talk about. Let's see here. What else? Ja Morant. What else do I got? Okay, we got to talk about Deemston Idris channeling the devil. Child, we got it's a lot, okay? But meanwhile, child, we're going to go to a break. I got to play. Y'all know I've been talking about this song for the last few weeks. I finally got it up. I finally pulled it up. I feel like it's appropriate to go with It's a Word, okay? Glitter and Gold by Rebecca Ferguson. It's the CC Show. I'm Carlotta. It's a late night. Y'all, if you're listening and you're up listening to the recording with me, what's up, y'all? If you listen to the archive show, still what's up, okay? We're going to get ready to go on break, but here is Rebecca Ferguson. We're going to kick it off with Glitter and Gold. I'll be back in a moment, y'all.
How good or bad have you all that glitter and all that gold won't buy you happy. You've been bored of riding wild horses, can't control with all your glitter and all of your gold. Take care of your soul, take care of your soul.
Me. Hey, I love that one. That's Raphael Sadiq, Never Give You Up. I love that one. Oh, my God, that's one of my favorite Raphael Sadiq joints. Now, you do know they say the room, I don't know, is it still on Tony? You supposed to be going back on tour out in these streets? Oh, my God. You know when the last time I saw Tony out together? Child, I was young. I think I was, like 18 or 19. I mean, about 18. Jeez, man. And I got to meet them one time because one of my friends, same background for Hammer. And so I got to meet all of them. They came to town. They weren't performing on that thing. They just happened to be in town, and they were they came to see MC Hammer in my hometown. And that's how I got to meet them, because they my friend. I was there visiting her at her hotel, and I got to meet Tony. Oh, my God. Listen, that was back in the day, okay? And my mama, I got to tell y'all this story. Y'all know how I love to tell my stories? Y'all know how I am? Okay, my mama in here. Like, so my friends were a little bit older, okay? So they were a little older than me. These girls, little older girls, I really like. They took me under their little wing and stuff. Used to let me hang out with them and stuff. So my mom, that night, my mom and her, my friend's mom, they were close friends, and so they were coming to the thing, so I couldn't go hanging, and so my friend had her little cousin come to the hotel, which was, like the same age as me, which we ended up being really good friends, and she kept us in the hotel, and that's how we met Tony, but my mom and them got to came, you know, and they, so I couldn't hang with the older girl, you know, because my mom was like, what's that going on? So my mom, when my mom and them meet Tony, this is my mom and her friend. Tell you what they say. This is Raphael Sadiq is in front of them, the other dude, the other brother, all three of them. And my mom, they say, my mom and them was probably like, yeah, oh my goodness. And they're like, yes, Tony, y'all seen them signs. That sign, it never rains in Southern California. They're like, yes, ma'am, that's us or whatever. And my mama, her and her friend, okay, they say, oh, yeah, we love that song. But you know what we really like? The one we really like, and they say, we love the instrumental even better. I mean, they all just fell out laughing. I was like, so embarrassed. No! Everybody was laughing at stuff. And they was like, they said, also, you don't want to hear us sing. It was, oh, my God, my mama did. They just didn't care, okay? My mama, no care, okay? No care for embarrassment. Just none, okay? They didn't care if it was Tony there. They didn't care who it was, okay? We don't like you singing on it. We like your singing. It's all right, but we like the whatchamacallit better. Yeah, we like the instrumental better. My mama didn't even care. Like, when I took my mama to see Maxwell, like, I thought my mama was going to be really impressed by Maxwell, because my mom and my grandma were supposed to go, okay? Now, my mama is a wildcat. My mama is, like, she's, like, the other extreme of me, okay? That's a whole nother person. You would be shocked. You'd be like, God. The only way you know we mother and daughter because we look alike. That's the only way you know. I look like her somewhat. But you'd be like, really? So, like, my mother is at the Maxwell concert, and so my grandma couldn't go because my grandma, it was too cold, and it started snowing or something because my grandma wanted to see Mary J. Blige. My grandma wasn't interested in Maxwell. He's like, you just want to see Mary. But my grandma couldn't go because it was cold. It was too cold for her. You know, I go out and shoot, and it was snowing and stuff. It was a few years back. Mary J. and Mike Max was on tour. So my mom goes, and my girlfriend, Brandy, sits with Mama. My girlfriend, Brandy's like, girl, your mama is showing up. She said, your mama, when Maxwell came after Mary, she showed up the whole time during Mary J. Blige. She said, when Maxwell came out, she started yawning and talking about he the lullaby man. She has not quit calling Maxwell the lullaby man since. She said, he about to put me to sleep. Out in ballads. We can't take him nowhere. And she would tell Maxwell that to his face. Not, she wouldn't care. I mean, you got to quit singing slow songs if you got to put me to sleep. So that's the kind of energy you dealing with. So it was not surprising she told Tony they sound better when the song sounds better without them singing. All right, it's the CC show. I am back over here. We're about to do the news. All right, so let's start off with Ja. I would say Ja Dummy Moran, but I'm starting to feel bad for him now, okay? Ja Morant suspension. Adam Silver says NBA uncovered a fair amount of new info. We'll announce decision after finals. If you guys go back a couple of shows ago, was it 2 to 3 shows? I don't know. I can't remember. I said to you that it's probably worse. Remember when I said it was probably worse? I'm not saying I said about Ja Morant. I said, you see him throwing a gun and all this crazy stuff? It's probably far worse. It's probably a lot of ish y'all don't know about, okay? Sounds like the NBA done discovered some, had a new discovery, okay? It's according to Yahoo Sports. It says Ja Morant remains suspended indefinitely by the Memphis Grizzlies after appearing on social media with a gun again. And it sounds like some significant discipline from the NBA could be on the way. When asked about the Grizzlies stars during his pre-NBA finals news, Conference Commissioner Adam Silver said his office had discovered a fair amount of additional information on Morant and would have already made a decision about him had it not been for the playoffs. In terms of timing, we've uncovered a fair amount of additional information since I was asked about the situation. We probably could have brought it to a head now, but we made the decision, and I believe the Players Association agrees with us, that it would be unfair to these players and these teams in the middle of the series to announce the results of that investigation. Silver went on to say Morant's decision will be announced shortly after the conclusion of the finals. He also said an individual player's history is considered while determining the player's discipline, which probably isn't good news for Morant, okay? The All-Star was suspended by the league for 8 games earlier this year after he went on Instagram Live while holding a gun at a strip club. That incident followed reports of multiple gun-related incidents involving Morant. The initial suspension was presented by the Grizzlies, and the NBA has an opportunity for Morant to work on his mental health, something the player himself discussed when he returned. Here's how Silver described Morant's behavior after being sidelined in the statement announcing suspension. It says he has expressed sincere contrition and remorse for his behavior. Ja has also made it clear to me that he's learned from his incident and that he understands his obligations and responsibility to the Memphis Grizzlies and broader NBA community, extend well beyond his play on the court. Apparently, the lesson didn't take for Morant. He was seen on Instagram Live once again holding a gun, okay? Meanwhile, Silver appeared on television to say he was shocked by Morant's latest incident, okay? And they're saying that they're basically saying there is some more things that have come to light. They will not discuss it until after the NBA final. But listen, I tell y'all, the strippers, when the strippers came out and was talking about Ja Morant, it was like, he's a shit. They should have just suspended him. Some of the strippers were saying that they should just throw him out the NBA. Because you know, now, the strippers see it all, okay? And so somebody was saying, you know, well, the strippers, you know, they acting like they scared. They see all kind of stuff. I said, that's how you know he's real. He might be far worse. Now, I'm not saying he is. This is allegedly. This is just my theory. But my theory is that if you got them saying he needs to be done for, you know, he needs to be out, that means he's bad. That means he could possibly be, no, not bad. He could possibly be worse. Okay. But I told y'all that already, that it could probably be the possibility. So I don't want him to be, his NBA career to be thrown away. I think he should sit down a whole season, though. Okay, because I feel like there's more going on. Not because of the gun thing. It's the way he was doing, not for showing a gun, but it was the way he did it. The way he presented the gun, how he was twirling around. He wasn't paying attention. He could have got somebody hurt. And all these other incidents that happened around the area. And he needs to be checked before he hurts himself or somebody else, okay? Just my opinion, all right? Now, y'all don't want to go back to work. Child, y'all don't want to go back. Y'all do not want to go back. Y'all like, I don't want to go back. about a week ago, was it a week or two ago, at CNBC, Elon Musk gives an interview and says it's time for everybody to go to work. Suddenly, all CEOs are saying, yeah, we agree. Let's go back to work. That tells you that these probably, this is my opinion, it's Carlotta 101's opinion, that most of these billionaires get together and try to set plans for industry. I don't think they can be trusted, especially the new brands, okay? But it says a worker quitting a six-figure job so she won't have to return to the office full-time says she's a victim of her boss's productivity paranoia. I don't need to be in the office to do my work. This is according to Insider.com, BusinessInsider.com. Now, let me just say this, okay, before I go into this article. COVID was the most people, before COVID, see, they think we're done. Before COVID, they were talking about more and more workers working remote and how that was better. Before COVID, remember at the, what's them people, the D, start with a D, the, oh, God, I forget their name, the conference, the, it's slipping my mind, but that conference they have every year, and they said the people at that conference, they were wanting to do the great reset. Of a day, oh, I just had it. The Davos, the Davos conference said they was interested in the Great Reset. Remember, they was talking that crap, talking about the you will own nothing, you will be happy and own nothing. It seems like they're trying to head that way. Okay, now they were before the COVID, they were talking about having more workers working at home, resetting. Before the Great Reset takes place, more people were working from home, all kind of stuff. Then COVID happened, and working from home became a thing. And now they crazy asses are trying to say, well, now we might want all y'all to come back and collaborate. Y'all weren't doing that just a few years ago. Y'all was talking about y'all wanted more people to start doing remote. So remote didn't just start because of COVID. It was starting beforehand because a lot of people in the American industry, some people were overworked. Some of those systems could be done at home cheaper and more efficient. So it's not every job. So I just felt it's just kind of a little suspect of what they're doing now. My personal opinion is they're trying to put more pressure on the American worker to break. I'm a conspiracy theorist, okay? So I believe these people, these billionaires ain't dumb about to the havoc they wreak when they cause these type of things, when they suddenly send people in the house and suddenly want them back, suddenly this and that, instead of easing things, and especially during a time where inflation's out of control, gas is high, it's more expensive to get into work, all kinds of stuff, okay? But it says Felicia, 53, is leaving her job after being asked to work in person 5 days a week. For over a year, she worked 3 days at home and two in her office, a perfect balance for her. But she'd rather find a job that pays less than keep going in 5 days. Whoa. Felicia isn't sold on returning to the office. After getting called back 5 days a week, she's leaving her job altogether. She'd rather forego a six-figure salary than be in the office every day. I know how to do my job. I don't need to be in the office to do my work, she told Insider. I just knew I didn't want to go back to what it felt like before. Felicia's 53-year-old administrator in Arizona. Insider verified her last name, employment, and salary, but she asked that they be withheld to protect her privacy. Has firms tightened their belts, the era of fully remote work may be ending. The Bureau of Labor Statistics recently said it found nearly 73% of companies offered little to no telework in September, a big leap from 60% in 2021. Major companies, including those that have done layoffs, are mandating that workers come back in. For some workers, the choice has been between coming back or getting fired. But Felicia is seeing herself out. For a year and a half, her office had a hybrid model. 3 days at home, 2 days in the office. She described it as the perfect work-life balance. I find that I got a lot more work done when I was working in the hybrid day, she said, referring to her day spent at home. She added that in the office there were so many distractions and interruptions that she couldn't keep up with her workload. I was going home and working 4 hours because I couldn't get the work done, she said. Now, I've heard a lot of people say this. A lot of people feel like they're more efficient at home, which Elon Musk, who is a person who has never probably, like he's talking about he got to be in office. Elon, shut the fuck up. You know you are a billionaire, and you can run up out of there anytime you want to and do all kinds of stuff, you know what I mean? But I don't think he understands the average. My personal opinion is dudes like Elon Musk telling people to go back to work and stuff, he has no concept, this is just my personal opinion, of the average, because he comes from a wealthy family. His wealth, I believe, from what I hear, was passed down to him. So he has no concept of the everyday worker, even though he's the CEO and runs, but he has no concept of what that life looks like and the pressures in that life and the pressures of everyday work. Perhaps men like him, this is my personal opinion, should go and work sometimes down in those areas, just go and sit at like what they used to do on Undercover Boss, and stay in those areas for a month to get a feel. You can't get it completely because you grew up in a different way, but to understand how a corporate thing works, you'll probably find out there's a lot of waste that goes on at the office. My personal opinion is that a lot of these companies are in very busy downtown areas, hub spaces where there are other restaurants, food services, businesses that depend on the hustle and bustle of corporations to be open. So that's why you have this, I think that's some of the reason, not all the reason, this idea to get people back in the office so that it can help these once thriving areas thrive again. That's just one of my opinions, okay? But just a month or so into having to work fully in person, Felicia turns in her notice of resignation. She said she liked being able to quietly focus while working virtually and then flipping the switch and seeing coworkers in person on in-office days. Now, water cooler gossip has returned in full force, and she feels like she's seeing less of her team. She realized while sitting in traffic one day that it was time to go, just sitting there and thinking, oh, my goodness, that's still enough. I have a meeting coming up, yet I'm stuck in this, she said. And it's like, why am I doing this to myself when it's not even necessary? As they focus on efficiency and belt tightening, managers want to see evidence that their employees are working, okay? And that's the idea from a person who, like Elon Musk, who put that out there, like this idea of some conservatives on Fox, this idea that people aren't working because they work from home. This was not working remote was not a new idea. America is so slow. No, America has a short attention. They slow and they got a short attention span. Okay, working remote was going to be a thing anyway. They already been talking about that way before COVID. Now they want to switch it up. Okay. Even after years of remote work, some managers are disproportionately worried that their remote employees aren't working, a phenomenon known as productivity paranoia. Felicia said the perception among managers at her company was that the hybrid employees weren't working. I heard a lot. Oh, you guys were only working 2 days per week and off for three, she said. And it's like, no, that's not true. We got most of our work done when we were working the three at home. And people even said the productivity at one point was higher because people were working at home. Now, there might be some people that's not working at home, but it's a whole lot of people that don't be working in them offices. Shit, I used to see it all the time. Talk about lack of productivity. You can get away with a lot of stuff in them offices. That's a lie. Okay. And she said she had several other people, she knows at her workplace who have left for more remote or hybrid jobs. That mere appearance of freedom made her miss the balance she had and inspired her departure. Okay, I just got to the point where it just wasn't working for me, she said. And I walked away from over $100,000 per year salary to seek positions that have hybrid options so that I can have that work-life balance. Felicia says she's looking for roles that will offer her similar flexibility, even if they pay less than what she makes now. The payoff is the driving and the traffic and the stress of being on the road 5 days per week versus being able to do the very same work and more from the convenience of the hybrid option, she said. Felicia says she thinks that more inflexible return to office mandates can harm productivity and lead to an exodus among workers. Now, in my personal opinion, they want to do that. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think the whole COVID thing, they knew that shit was going to, they knew when people come back, people weren't going to feel good about coming to work. People going to be like, you know what, I'm tired. I don't got a taste of what it's like to do my work at peace. I finish my projects faster because I ain't got nobody at the office talking out here. I had to hear nobody at the next desk talking and all this stuff. When my kids get home, I'm here. Hey, you know, I put a little food on the table. I think people are feeling a little bit better. Men are feeling less stressed out from the stress of the office. Women are feeling less stressed out from the stress of the driving there. It's just so many things. And I think they knew people was going to taste that life. They knew it. And then they was going to send them into ultra shock to get them back in, because my personal opinion is they won't try to leave. Why? Because they lied to you. They want an excuse to replace y'all. Because they don't want to just replace y'all with robots, because most people be like, oh, that's evil. This is such an evil. No, they just want to try to be like, well, we didn't have enough workers wanting to work, so we're going to replace it. What were we to do? Nobody wants to work from, it's like what they did to black people. Black American people. Traditional black America. They say, what did that Hispanic, the Mexican president say about black people, which wasn't true? Black people don't even want to work the jobs that a lot of the people, the Mexican people do in America. That's a damn lie. That's all who used to do them. The problem is the difference is that black people want to be paid a fair wage because they're citizens. They're paying you cheap labor. Ain't that black people work in the fields and won't paint no bills and no houses and stuff? They want to be paid fairly. And what they do, they replace black people because they lied, because black people were saying, I ain't going to take no job working $2 an hour outside in the heat painting for 8 hours. So I'm a citizen. So what they do is, we couldn't find enough workers. Well, what happened? The United States would break down without the person, without illegal immigration. Lie. No, you would have to pay people a fair wage, and people would come get them jobs. You know that, but you just don't want to pay people a fair wage. So you use this excuse as, oh, we can't, but these people, nobody would take those jobs, not even the blacks. Please, a lot of people would take jobs, cleaning up, painting and stuff, but they was paying them right. But when you exploiting illegal immigrants for your greed and profit, no, yes. It's easy. That's what you're going to do with AI. You're just going to get rid of people, and you're going to blame it on the people. That's a lie. These people is hideous. Hideous, hideous, hideous. That's why you looking like the world got to stop. It got to be the end times. I'm sorry, y'all. I know it's sad to hear. I don't like hearing it's the end times either, but it got to be the end times because of stuff like this. Sad. Just sad. Okay? More people are going to feel that way that this woman feels. They're not going to want to go back to these jobs, okay, because they played games during COVID, played a lot of games. They used COVID to usher in a lot of BS. Okay? Here's another terrible story, okay? Short supply of cancer meds. Now we got to worry about the cancer meds. If people get sick during this time, you got to worry about if they got some cancer medications, okay? This is according to Yahoo News. A short supply of cancer drugs has doctors and patients worried. We're at a critical juncture. Sitting in an infusion center last Wednesday afternoon, Elizabeth Arnold wondered whether the cancer drug dripping into her vein would be enough to make a difference. Arnold, 53, was recently diagnosed with advanced uterine cancer. Her surgeon said she needed chemotherapy to knock down the tumors before operating. But with key medications in shortage, she was told she would get 5 bags of the drug carboplatin not the usual six. The nurse at her hospital in Anchorage, Alaska, said they would likely run out completely before her next treatment in 3 weeks. I am terrified, quite frankly, said Arnold, a journalism professor at the University of Alaska and former reporter with the National Public Radio. She caught up in a frightening and frustrating national shortage of essential drugs that experts say has put the lives of more than 100,000 cancer patients, particularly women, at risk. The last 6 months have been the worst in my career, including some of the shortages we had during the peak of COVID. It's just been incredibly challenging, said Julie Kennelly, Associate Director of the Pharmacy at the State of Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center. 14 cancer drugs have been in shortage in recent months, mostly because of supply chain issues. Those in the shortage supply include cisplatin, carboplatin, platinum-based drugs used to treat gynecologic, sorry, breast, testicular, bladder, head, and neck, and non-small cell lung cancers. The American Society of Clinical Oncology has been working to resolve the shortage and saw the first glimmers of hope last week after a national delivery of carboplatin, which has been in shortage for a month. I think we may very well have hit rock bottom and are slowly see more release of the drugs, said Julie Gallo, the Society of Chief Medical Officers and Executive Vice President. But it's not clear whether the crisis is ending or if a supply will continue to ebb and flow. None of us knows what that means. It's going to be adequate. Are we going to be practicing week to week, said Dr. Amanda Nichols Fader, a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Johns Hopkins Hospital and president-elect of Society of Gynecological Oncology. We obviously need a long-term solution, okay? Listen, this is crazy. Hopefully it does not work because you're going to see huge issues, okay, in the United States. And people are going to be very impacted because they are, every year they have new cancer diagnoses. I just had a girlfriend a year ago who was diagnosed with breast cancer in her anterior phase, you know, very young. They just happened to catch it very early. But every year, many women are diagnosed, and men, everybody diagnosed. So a lot, not everybody, but a lot of people are diagnosed with cancer. So it's important that these drugs get the shelves and not. And it shouldn't be no supply shortage. To me, that's always BS. I'm starting to hear, I be starting to be looking at y'all side eye. Be like, why y'all can't fix these basic issues, okay? Because people's lives depend on it. We're in a very strange, greedy, Twilight Zone-like world, okay? And hopefully they get this situation together. It's really terrible to hear that, okay? Also, let's see, what else we got to talk about? Now, life expectancy in the U.S., let's talk about that, okay? Y'all know life expectancy in the United States, okay, is dropping, okay? U.S. life expectancy, it's from USA Today, problem is bigger than we thought, report finds, okay? The country's life expectancy problem gained renewed attention in recent years during the COVID-19 pandemic after seeing the largest drop since World War II. As U.S. life expectancy continues to plummet, a new report found that the country has been at a life expectancy disadvantage since the 1950s and has only gotten worse since then. The study published Thursday in American Journal of Public Health also shows that more than 50 countries have surpassed the U.S. in life expectancy since the 1930s, and a handful of states may be partly responsible. The scale of the problem is bigger than we ever thought, older than we thought, and the number of countries outperforming the United States is much larger than we thought, said the study author Dr. Stephen Wolf, director of Emergence Body of Health at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond. The findings offer a new perspective on U.S. life expectancy and shed light on how to reverse the trend. The U.S. began seeing dramatic increases in life expectancy in the early 20th century, mainly a result of public health advances such as vaccines and sanitation, Wolf said. The new report shows how the growth continued in the 50s, with the U.S. life expectancy ranking 12th, highest in the world. But the growth rate began declining in 1955, and by 1968, the U.S. had fallen to 29th. The decline began much earlier than many researchers had thought, that Wolf said. And that's when this problem began. We cited the 1980s because we haven't gone back far enough in the historical data to see what happened before, he said. That was the decline in the 1950s that raises questions about what was going on then. He says the life expectancy rate rebounded in 1974, according to the study, then decelerated in 1983. Provisional data from 2021 shows U.S. life expectancy has dropped to 76.1 years, according to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, the lowest it has been since 1996. But the general takeaway remains the same, said Michael Engelman, associate professor of sociology, University of Wisconsin. The timeline shows that life expectancy may be heavily influenced by systematic factors that are larger than individual health, say. It says, taking historical perspective teaches us things that are not predetermined. Things change, and that means there's possibly possibility for more improvement in the future. Because middle-income countries made enough gains in life expectancy to catch up and then surpass the U.S. during a time when the country's acceleration slowed. Wolf said by 2019, the U.S. ranked 40th among populous countries, lower than Lebanon and Albania. Part of this, in my personal opinion, you guys can read this whole article. It's in USA Today. But part of this, the reason for the U.S. life expectancy, it don't take no studies for me to figure out. It's a rat. It's most of these places, it's a rat race in some of these states. They overcrowded. You let in illegal immigration. People run across the borders. You have some cities that are very overcrowded that should not be overcrowded. That's why illegal immigration, or you had to sign up to be to get into the country. Now you just couldn't walk over people. Not too many countries do that. People, they want to know the number of people they have coming in their country because there's a limited number of resources, limited number of you know, when you have, and they should first go and help the citizens. But when you see a decline, not only with illegal immigration and overcrowding and work and rat races at work and just more stress in life, of course, life expectancy is going to go down, especially America. The more America has, the more crazier it gets. Okay? So I'm not surprised by this, all right? So you guys can check out that article in USA Today, all right? So I'm talking about Dancing Idris out in the streets, okay? Lord, when I heard this story, I was like, huh? Really? Okay, you know, listen, I'm an actress, and I have, you know, I started acting when I was, how old? 13 years old. Listen, my grandmother, when my grandmother found out I could act, she was like, she threw me right in action. just like singing, when you know, it was just a thing, okay? So, yeah, but I've been doing this for a long time, and one of the methods that I grew up studying, and a lot of my teachers were, they were method actors, and what method actors, and I talked about this in my theater group this week. We were talking about method actors, and what method actors do is they, you know, a lot of times they believe you have to experience real feelings, real things, or something, have something real to pull from. It can be a very dangerous form of acting. So to me, when I heard this, what Damon Idris done, I kept thinking, he's kind of trying to do method acting stuff. But what they had here, what he said is that he called on the devil, okay, to tap into his character in Snowfall, okay? This is according to HollywoodUnlocked.com. It says, Dancing Idris revealed he had nightmares after calling on the devil in order to tap into his role on Snowfall, okay? It says, Dancing Idris is revealing some of the struggles he went through filming the sixth season of Snowfall. Like speaking on his role as Frankenstein, the actor opens up about how he had to call on the devil in order to tap into the character, okay? I mean, he calling Candyman or something, okay? You know, I don't even play Candyman, let alone the devil. I don't play Candyman for me. I don't play none of that, okay? I was hitting the block, right? I was like, I'm doing it right, said in an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. So I went to the corner, and, you know, I was looking at the wall, and I was like, come on. He was like, come on, devil, right? Come to me, because I had to do something, like, crazy, right? I had nightmares for a month. Like, I had nightmares every day. Like, I felt like I just felt that energy. And I had to pray and do all this stuff to get rid of it. You know, you call your mom up, and you're like, bring me back to life. And that stuff is real. That stuff is really real. They said Idris really showed the world his acting skills while playing his role on the hit show. Fans were upset the show came to an end, but satisfied with the way the show ended. Idris' character was something special to see on screen. So over the years, we talked a lot about different variations of it. I can remember Fox pitching the fifth and sixth seasons. And at that point, I was like, well, maybe he gets his money and loses everything, and everybody destroys his community. But he becomes the soloist. But this was the right thing to do, even in the very, very early mini rooms we did with Leonard Chang and John. We did with Leonard Chang and John Singleton. There was talk, well, maybe he ends up destroyed like his father. Okay, but listen, this character, Franklin Saint, was a very evil character, but ain't no reason to call the devil, okay? And I have played the devil in you know, when I was working on my associate's degree in school, I played a role where I played the devil. We redid the devil's advocate, and I did it from a female point of view, okay? And I was the devil, and really people in class were like, oh, when I got them, he was like, oh, hell nah. He was scared, you know, whatever. He was laughing about, you all right? You know, it was very real. But I didn't have to call him a devil. You know what I'm saying? I just said, listen, I understand. I'm like, you know, Lord, just help me to understand the perspective of what Lucifer is like and how would he show up in female form, and help me to get that across to my audience. But listen, anytime you start calling on spirit, come to me and stuff like that, he probably need an exorcist right now. Lori Harvey, if I was you, I might be a little nervous. Because just because he thinks the devil done went, he might not have. He might just be laying dormant. You calling on no devil to play no role. That's crazy. That's nuts. You can't be calling on a spirit. That's like people be calling on spirits. Oh, I need a spirit to get on stage. I need a spirit to go. You do not. You do not want to play. You be calling on the ancestor spirits. I be telling people all the time, don't do that. You didn't know who your ancestors are. You might get Grandma Juju Boo, who was some crazy person. You might get Uncle Lulu, who was a drunk. You might get Grandpa Hicks, who was a molester. Hey, you can't be talking about calling on spirits of the ancestor, the ancestors. Because you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know who the people, especially if you don't know who they were. I be trying to tell people every time, are we playing with these spirits out here? And he up here playing with the biggest one out. And I know, you know, the devil, if you know anything about him, you know the devil didn't send himself. You know what he did. Because the devil's like, I'm too good for that. He can't be omnipresent. He probably sent one of his minions. So you got a demon, a strong one. So Jason, that character, Franklin Satan, is evil, but he ain't the devil. He got legions, probably. So he might have sent you a few demons, a few devils, Dingson. If I was you, I'd be going to church and get some oil and get prayed on. You might need an exorcist, okay? I'm just saying, that's crazy. That is some of the nuttiest people. Don't be calling on spirits. Okay? Just trying to tell y'all, you don't need no, if you a good actor, you do not need, listen, what's that? It's a story I remember my acting teacher used to say. I think it was about Laurence Olivier. I can't remember. But she used to talk about how this one actor was doing all this. They were playing two. They both were playing bums. And one actor would come in every day. He wouldn't take no bath. He wasn't shaving. He wasn't doing this. He was going hungry without eating, so he could get into the character of a bum, right? And this other actor was eating grapes and being fed and pampered every day by the people, the backstage people and everything as he prepared. Then he would dress up as a bum and everything. And they both came out with the same results. And I think it was Laurence Olivier. And the guy looked at him, and the guy looked at him eating all this food and doing all this nice stuff in between takes. And the guy looked at him like, dang, you ain't hardly doing none of this stuff I'm doing. And the man says to him, I think it's Laurence Olivier, he said, it's called acting, my dear. It's called acting. It's pretending. And my thing is, listen, there are times you can tap into a character, meaning understanding the who, what, when, and why of a character. And I remember this week, this is what somebody was going with over with us on my in my acting group. And I thought that was so good, of understanding who, what, when, why of a character and falling into a character. It is a deep process, but you don't have to go like when you start doing wild stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because it can take, if you go too deep into a character, you can carry them with you for a long time. You know what I'm saying? And it's a very dangerous thing to get out of pretend. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And when you start calling on spirits, the only spirit you should call on is the God spirit. God can give you insight into any person or anyone. But playing with these spirits, y'all don't be playing with these spirits, you know, acting roles. Y'all wild out in these streets. Yes, wow. That's all we do it out here, calling on the devil. Talking about, I need to call on the devil. He just sent you a legion. That's even worse. Jeez. Okay, so also, let me talk about Gary. Are we ready talking about Denaya, whatever her name is. Lord have mercy. Peter Jackson's ex-wife, Denaya, charges upwards of $5,000 for infidelity recovery boot camp after divorce. This is according to BlackEnterprise.com. It says Denaya Jackson is fresh off the heels of divorcing Gary Jackson and wants women to shell out for her infidelity coaching. Denaya has been on full press run about reclaiming her time in the wake of her public split from Derek, who has been caught in multiple cheating scandals throughout the course of their marriage. Now, after surviving Derek Jackson, Denaya is aiming to help other women survive the serial cheaters in their life. On Wednesday, OnSite took notice of the $4,997 Denaya is charging for her personal 13 coaching sessions that teach customers how to profit from your pain. Screenshots from Denaya's website show the price point. She's charging for programs within her infidelity recovery bootcamp. Child. This right here, this is hilarious. She done became a scammer, help us Lord. According to somebody said, like husband, like wife, this is barely here herself. You're trying to get some vulnerable women out of their hard-earned butt. According to her website, Denaya, who wants those who are interested to learn how I recover from infidelity and share five benefits a customer will get out of enrolling in her online course. There are a number of services she offers, including 40 days and nights of healing. For just two payments of $4.95 a month, a bundle that includes her book, a three personal 13 sessions a week for two payments of $3,499 a month, and just 13 coaching sessions of $4,997. What? I come to you as a witness and testimony who has experienced exceptional pain, trauma, and bondage emotionally, physically, and spiritually, she says on the page. After selecting a live coaching session with her via Zoom, after catching wind of Denaya's high-priced coaching on site, and others accused her of the social influencer of trying to get over on the vulnerable. Listen, y'all, I said this to y'all last week. I said Denaya, y'all was trying to make her into some hero, and I like Denaya. I said I liked her and everything, but here's the deal. Zaniya, even when she was married, she was heading up Derek's business. Oh, you help us wasn't out here listening. Because I was all on here talking about she's been through gas and she's been through trauma and all this stuff. Yes, but did you hear what I said? When Zaniya, knowing he was a cheater, knowing he was a hoe out in these streets, knowing he was dropping it low and spreading it wide, as Mama Braxton say, knowing he was doing all of that, she was still heading up his business, telling y'all what not to do, okay? So Zaniya been in on scheme, in my personal opinion, okay? So I don't know what y'all surprised about. She out here trying to charge $5,000 on her thing. Now, let me just say this to you. First thing is this. Y'all come over here to this show and get a lot of ass for free. I told you, I gave y'all a great thing a couple of weeks ago about what Laura London said. Take it and use it wisely. It's free. It gives you, it releases all kind of healing. Okay? All I'm trying to say, listen, when you come up out of pain and you come up out of some things and you might have a lot to say and you might have a word for people, my personal opinion is that sometimes you need to give that word out for free. And then have people start, once you heal, because wait a minute, and I don't think you got to be all the way healed to give a word. A lot of people are going through healing and they can teach mightily. Okay? I'm just telling y'all, that's real deal, okay? But first you need to give out what you've learned for free for a while. And then people catch on to you, and then have you people start going, I'm not saying $5,000, but you know what I'm saying? Then you might start charging for a speaking engagement, or you might charge for this, something like that. But don't be trying to take advantage of people that quit. And y'all shouldn't be surprised about her doing this. I'm not. I knew where she was going last week when she showed up on the Wifey show, the Dear Wifey show. I knew that was going to be next, okay? Because I heard Zaniya's interview, and I was listening real good and real closely, okay? So this don't surprise me at all. Now, when we get back, child, what more we got to talk about out here? We got to talk about Chili. Said she been in Tycon. Her and Usher was apparently, sound like me, hanging out back and forth to 2019. Child. Now, Chili, you didn't get the, my business. Yes, so we got to talk about that, child. We got to talk about, what else we got to talk about? Oh, my God, so much. Y'all should have. Oh, Lord, I'm still thinking about Zaniya. Y'all should not be surprised about that. Okay, we got to talk about Chili, and then we got to talk about, what else here? Let's talk about Cardi B, saying she's bored. Got to talk about Cardi B, and a whole lot more. Child, we got a lot more to discuss. I got to take a break. We'll get to it when I get back. Meanwhile, let's play a little bit of we're gonna play. I don't know how I be doing up in here. I think I be having it, I don't have it ready. Okay, we're gonna be listening to Maxwell's Off. It's the CC show. I'll be back in just a moment. Okay. Let's drink lemonade.
Very best in government, politics, celebrity entertainment, music news. Tune into the Carlotta Chatwood Show right here on Block Talk Radio.
Tell, what is this? I'm just now hearing about Britney Spears, out here showing up at the gym. You remember when Mariah Carey was on her working out in her heels and stuff on TV and stuff? Everybody got TV and crazy. But they just saying that Britney Spears was showing up in a dress and her heels. She showed up in her dress and her heels at the gym and trying, you know, talking about she liked working out with her heels and stuff. Now, I know what I'm going to say. My listeners who I've been listening to the show for the longest, I know what I'm going to say. In time, it will reveal. Daddy Spears, Britney Spears' daddy. I don't know if he was all the way right, but daddy, you're going to be like the Joe Jacksons of the world, and you might have been hard. You might not did some stuff right. But in the end, I think you're going to be redeemed. Y'all know y'all shouldn't have took that conservative strip off that girl, but I digress. Anyway, I ain't got time to talk about Britney out in these streets. What's going on? I need the answer to that early on, okay? Chaz, not Megan Good and Jonathan Majors out here traveling to Morocco together. No, it ain't. Megan, say it ain't so. I already said with Megan Good, don't get knocked out. That's all I got to say. Megan, if this is a relationship for you, do not be coming back. Don't you show up. 5 years from now, I know people call out, you need to give a woman like her space, you know, so she can. Women have to be able to admit their abuse. Not like, nope. Not if you see somebody got charges currently on him, and they may have a allegedly a plethora of people waiting to tell their story. See? Girl, you're not smart. But this is according to Rhymes with Snitch, if it's true. Via TMZ, Jonathan Majors and Megan Good are going strong overseas, popping up in Morocco where they're shopping for pottery. Uh-oh. But was you the chick that was on the phone that got the fight going? Got the fight popping, Megan Good? Anyway, alleged fight. Folks were there, who were there, tell us a couple stopped by a shop called Art Naji, where they appeared to take interest in a fountain and a fireplace. The shop hails itself as the biggest handmade factory shop of pottery and Zeli in Moroccan towns in the country. And we're told Jonathan and Megan seem to be negotiating a deal with the staff, so it's unclear if they pulled the trigger. Was you the chick that he caught, that the girl that when he was texting Megan? Was you the other one? Was you the one the girl had to smash the phone about? All I'm saying is this to us, okay? You know, ain't my business. You can be out here whoever you want to in these streets, okay? You can do whatever you want to. I just don't want to hear no, he knocked me over the head in 5 years. That's all I got. That's all I got. That's all I got. Okay? Carry on. Love and light. You know, I just want to say something. It is so sad to hear the story of this week of Jackie O, who was a Wildin' Out, was one of the people on Wildin' Out. She was also a longtime partner of DC Young Fly, 32 years old, passed away. And this is... it says, patient's complaint launched against surgeon photo with Miss Jackie O before her passing resurfaced. Past complaints launched against plastic surgeon Dr. Zachary Oka have resurfaced following the passing of a former Wildin' Out star, Miss Jackie O. Before 33-year-old suddenly passed away in Miami on May 31st, she teased that she will be doing a big reveal of her mommy makeover in the near future. The cosmetic procedure can include a combination of breast augmentation, liposuction, or a tummy tuck. Jackie has three children, daughters Nala, Nova, and a son named Prince, with her longtime love, DC Young Fly. Jackie's cause of death has not been shared publicly. However, speculative reports suggest she visited with Dr. Oka Haas. A screen started circulating online that the PH1 physician also deleted the Instagram post with him and Jackie showing her dressed in an open medical gown. The caption mentioned her plans to undergo cosmetic procedure. On Friday, People Share claims originally reported by Paysix that Dr. Oka had filed lawsuits against patients whose reviews of him leaving them botched, okay? And this was, let me see this. A lot of people are speculating that she went to get this surgery and something went tragically wrong. Let me just say, you girls are 32. I'm not against plastic surgery, okay? I'm not against, especially for older women, because age is something to deal with. Listen, let me tell you something. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not for older women just going in there and getting 20 things done at once and all that stuff. I'm saying that a lot of these at 32, and this isn't to diss her or anything, but you can get in the gym. You know, it's a different story for a woman. And you can get in the gym at 50, okay, and stuff like that. But sometimes you get stubborn things and stuff like that. I'm just telling y'all, young girls, y'all don't need all this stuff y'all got. They got doing. They going, okay? A lot of older women don't either. But a lot of y'all don't need perfect boobs right now. Both boobs are perky right now. Now, some of us older women might want to go in and get a lift or something like that, but y'all don't need it. Y'all ain't 45 and 50 and 60. I ain't like y'all going in here getting all this shit done. Ending up, she leaving her three babies behind. Now, you know, I don't know. She was in show business. When you're in show business, there's so much pressure. It's just so much pressure nowadays to be a woman. Oh, at any age. Pressure to look good, to look your best. As women, sometimes you feel, especially young women, I'm sure y'all feel in constant competition with Instagram people, Instagram models, Instagram this, Instagram, you know what I'm saying? Instagram people, I mean, that Instagram, I be like, damn, you know, some of these people be looking great. But listen, you got to be the best you can be. You got to love yourself ferociously. I be mad at myself too. There's some things. Listen, I ain't gonna lie to y'all. I've been looking at little things. You know, like I said, as I get older, I say I think I'm gonna get that done. Yeah, I ain't lying. I ain't gonna lie to y'all too. I've looked a little. You know, I got nice boobs, but I might want them a little messy. You know what I'm saying? I ain't lying. Shoot, there's a couple of things I might want to get. You know, as I get not now. I don't think I need it right now, but when I get a little bit, I might want to get a little. You know, feel you in a little bow tie. Maybe I might want to do that. I ain't gonna knock it out the table. Hey, but y'all going in here getting 6 things done at once. Y'all don't do that. That's crazy. And all just to be like, for what? And I don't want to just sound like I'm dissing her. I push prayers to her family and prayers to DC Young Life. It's so sad. For 32 years old and gone for some pools. And these doctors out here, they be doing this shit. They be knowing they ain't equipped to do. I ain't saying that was his situation. I don't know what the situation is yet. But I'm just talking about we've had a number of so-called cases where surgeries have been botched, people been killed, everything. These people ain't caring. They just move y'all in like cattle. Y'all gotta study these when y'all go get plastic surgery. You gotta first of all, I have a friend who told me she had a plastic surgery that went completely. She was talking about how she got infections and everything after. It was terrible, okay? Because of the follow up, hers was doing the follow up. I'm just trying to tell y'all, y'all got to be careful. First, you got to do self-reflection, introspection, and then you got to study these surgeons and stuff and reviews and make sure, you know what I'm saying? Any kind of surgery, you can get messed up out here, but these plastic surgeries are being used in tons of cases. For years you've been using. Just be careful. I know the pressure is to be beautiful and to try to compete, but listen, let me tell you something. Work on your spirit, man. Work on that beauty from the inside. Yes, I'm not saying don't work on your outside, don't take care of your outside, don't do it, but make sure that you just make sure you have wisdom in these things. And I know you may see something, you might like, ooh, I want to look like that. Oh, I want a body like that. Oh. Okay? But when you listen to men talk, I be listening to men. Because I be, you know, I was like, you know, I be worried about certain things like failure. Like, you know, you stuff like that. You know, I be like, but men be acting like, Men be like, y'all be tripping. We don't be thinking about having that stuff. But I think women do it. It's just something that women feel on the inside and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of things, sometimes these men don't be paying attention. Listen, some of y'all go get these plastic surgeries and all this stuff done for you because you're trying to look good. You know, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to maintain as you get older, kind of a sexy look or look for your spouse or look good for yourself and all this stuff. But a lot of y'all be trying to do all this stuff to keep a man and stuff, but they end up cheating with somebody that don't be looking half as good as your surgery work. I'm trying to tell y'all the truth out here. Be real. Y'all done went and got the boobs lifted and the booty injections and stuff like that. And the child, they end up cheating with somebody. Child, I ain't going to talk about it. I'm just telling y'all, be careful out here. And prayers for her family. I'm so sad for her children, everything. Just sad. But it's, you know, prayers. It's just a sad thing to find out. That's hard, okay? let's talk about Chili and Usher out on the street. Chili admits she and her ex Usher were still in contact while he was married. This is according to Page Six. Now see, it's something about Chili and Usher. I ain't gonna lie. I used to look at them and say, damn, they cute together. They, you know, you be like, damn, they fire. They look good together. I'm not surprised that she had this tug of war of getting rid of Usher. Is Usher her twin flame? You know, because I'll be talking about that twin flame stuff out here in the streets. You know, I'm very interested in the twin flame journey. I've been talking about having twin flame people on this show, and I haven't done it yet. But twin flame journey is so freaking interesting. If y'all ever heard about the twin flame, I mean, it's a different than a soulmate journey, because a soulmate, you can have several soulmates in this lifetime, you know, they say. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like when you talk about soulmates, like, soulmates can be beyond, they can be platonic relationships, too. Like, I feel like I have several soulmates. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like my granny's a soulmate. I be feeling like I have this girlfriend named Felicia, who I feel like a soulmate. I mean, so if you can have the platonic, or you can be your husband, can be your soulmate. You can have so many things. The twin flame journey is so wild, if y'all ever heard it. It's people, like, telepathic. Oh, my God, when I hear it, it's powerful. It's a powerful journey, but it can be one of the most horrible relationships to go through ever. From what I hear about y'all people on YouTube, you go through a woo-hoo, woo. Twin flame ain't no joke. Okay, and the twin flame, they say, supersedes the soulmate. So I wonder if Chili was like a, you know, like that's her twin, because they even look alike, kind of, her and her and us. This is TLC singer recently shared that she and the Confessions crooner stayed in contact up until 2019, despite ending their highly publicized romance 15 years before. I love heart, the 52-year-old, whose real name is Rosanda Thompson, told People Thursday. I was like, God, why can't I get over this? He couldn't either. Oh, man. Even with, you know, with the, you know, ain't nobody blaming. I ain't trying to put no rumors like I hate. Okay, Chili said that she finally cut her ex off to focus on myself. I even stopped dating, she added, because before that I thought if I met the right guy during that time that I wasn't over Usher, it wouldn't work. I would never want to straddle the fence. Wow. Girl, it happens. People straddle some shit. Chili, you were straddling the fence because you was up. Don't be trying to talk. Chili, you had to see Chili's dating show. Remember that show years ago where Chili had that dating show? Chili always was one of them chicks, and I thought this might have been one of her problems. She was always trying to be perfect and seeking perfection. And she wasn't perfect. I was like, Chili, you were so dysfunctional. I mean, she was so dysfunctional. So, I mean, like, here she is saying, yeah, I don't never want to travel since, but you were traveling the fence. You were talking to this man, and you know he was with somebody else. Okay, so play games. The Squirrel Singer told the outlets that she and Usher 44 were on and off for years and will reconnect when they weren't in other relationships. However, the Confessions singer was married to Tamika Foster from 2007 to 2009 and to Grace Carey from 2015 to 2018, which was 1 year before Chili and Usher ended communication with each other. He was doing a lot back then, Chili. See, Chili. Chili Usher began in 2001 and caught it quit 3 years later. The same year, Usher released Critically Acclaimed Confessions. But I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you about Chili and Usher, okay? I ain't going to lie, Chili. I ain't going to lie. Y'all even looking like, y'all cute together. I can't. Y'all might have been twin flames. I mean, I know Usher was going to, Usher, I feel like, had children. He was exposed to too much as a child, and that, you know, made him a little hoe. I mean, she's allegedly, and, you know, all the stuff y'all say about Usher out here. Okay, but, and he needs to, like, probably a lot of therapy to stop the hunt. But listen, I'm going to tell you, if they twin flames, listen here, I'm Matthew, what's your name, the other lady over there who's already started having these babies with Usher? Let me explain something, okay? These two is going to keep doing this. That they twin, and they look alike. I'm scared because they said they were doing this on and off for 15 years after they were were messing around. They were still with each other. Y'all just didn't know it. They kept that shit secret. They were still messing around with each other. So I'm just trying to tell you, Matthew and the other girl over there with Usher, I'm trying to tell you. Now, Chili decides to bring it out because Chili trying to stop the madness. Chili like, oh, God, I gotta got into a good relationship. I don't want this fool to come back. It's triggering me seeing him skating all over the damn place. I know what's going on, Chili. It's triggering me. I got to put it out there so I can be held accountable. But listen, these two is twin flames. I got to suspect. I don't know what y'all say about this twin flame stuff. They're going to be back together. They're going to find some way to find each other again. Okay? They're going to find some way. I don't want y'all to get... Just trying to tell you. That's all. Because they couldn't drop it for 15 years, okay? I'd be scared of them. Them type of people, you got to be scared. They couldn't drop it. They couldn't drop it. Like, after they broke up, they still was out in these streets for the next 15 years talking about, oh, not in between relationships. No, you wouldn't. They wouldn't know in between relationships. Chilling. Don't lie. Ooh. I love hard. I know you do. You do too. Y'all just couldn't get over. Y'all couldn't say, y'all look like it. Y'all look, they just look like they like each other. They videos they used to do with each other was hot. They used to look, I was like, damn. I mean, I used to look at them because I say, they look good together. Like, there's one of them couples where you go, yeah, wow. I bet it's they, why? I bet they just, because you can see the energy just oozing off of them too. I ain't gonna lie. It's few people in the world that you can see that. When you walk into a room and you got sparks with somebody, oh, my God, like you could be across the room and the sparks, the fireworks is going on. And y'all hoping don't nobody see the fireworks. Y'all like, dang, that's how Chili and Usher was. Like, you see the fireworks just start popping. Like, oh, my, and you can't do nothing about it. You try, like, when Usher was making... Like, when he was saying Let It Burn, I believed him, Chili. Okay, they were good actors. Or I believe that. Chili telling me that was real out of these streets. They couldn't let it go. I believe you, Chili, because y'all look like it. Y'all still look like it. Cardi B misses normalcy. Having everything gets boring, Cardi says. This is according to hotnewshiphop.com. It says Cardi B recently took to social media to respond to a fan asking questions about her new remix alongside Lotto. She revealed in her response that despite her achievements, she misses her old ways of life. She went on to brush off the feeling as part of growing up before continuing to hype the song. Okay, last thing, when is Cardi going to transition to full millionaire? Like, why are you posing with guns and things that put it on the floor again? Put it on the floor again, remix video. A Twitter user asked. They added who escapes the hood just to relieve it every chance they get. You want to know what's crazy? Cardi begins her reply. I was tearing the other day because I missed the old life. She went on to claim, sometimes having everything gets boring. Adding, but I won't complain. It's not about me anymore. This is part of growing up and about my kids, she was saying. She finished her response, but yeah, put it on the floor. Listen, let me just say this, okay, Cardi B. And maybe, I hope you don't miss that old life that she was out here telling people that. See, I don't like to mention too much about Cardi B because Cardi B was out here lawsuit. I mean, but she said herself that she was doing a lot of wild things back in the day. Now, if you missed that, Chad, I don't know what to tell you. But I'm pretty sure she probably means, Cardi probably means is, you know, she's bored because fame can make you a prisoner. Now, I'm sort of like, Cardi, let me give you some of this real life inflation. And this gas is too expensive and these groceries are expensive problems, okay? I'm sure you will not be bored. But I get what she's saying. But I think that when a person has that problem, they are not grounded in purpose for why she's there in that lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes people don't realize, like, pain is a hard thing to deal with. I believe that. I believe that is hard. I ain't gonna lie. You know what I'm saying? I believe that's hard to deal with. But at the same time, I also believe that you have to be grounded in purpose. And you got to understand that sometimes your giftings and your purpose and stuff puts you in certain positions in certain places. And that understanding why you're there and the purpose of that thing will keep you solid and grounded in that space. That's all I can say for people, okay? I just believe that's very important. if you don't have a sense of why you came, you was just there because you just wanted to rap and you just wanted to be popular and stuff like that, and all this stuff with child, you're going to, it's going to flounder for you because you don't have, you just out there because you just acting. But I always, this is just my personal opinion, I believe, and not all entertainers have this, but I believe they should, especially if you're dealing in the fame game. You need to have a purpose for all the madness that is deeper and bigger than yourself, okay? And if you're bored out here, there's no reason you should be bored. When you got, let me tell you something, you got so many things available to you, then, you know, I'm going to tell you something, Cardi, what would be interesting. You know what you should do? Even though they didn't stop you from doing the Tasha K lawsuit, they didn't stop her from getting money from Tasha K. I'm going to tell you something I'd do that was, if I'm bored, I'd probably say, you know what, I'm going to forgive some of that debt. I'm going to make a deal with Tasha, and I'm going to do an interview with her ass, in person and live. I do fun stuff like that, okay? Even though it's Tasha, she can do whatever, she can say whatever, whatever. I just do it for my own health. I would also get out here, help some people, help when you're feeling bored. Go out here, create a foundation, create, help young women get out the life that you was in before you became, before you became Cardi B. Help some other people, and there's so many things you can do. Fame don't got to be a trap for you, sis. It ain't got to be born up there with all that access to resources and all that access to dollars and coins. That's how. You do a lot. Do a lot. You ain't got to be bored, sis. No reason to be bored. There's a lot of things you do. You go out here. Shoot, where's she at? Where's she at? You right. She living in Atlanta. You can feed the homeless in Atlanta. It's a lot of homeless people up there in Atlanta. I just heard one time they was having them people standing in hotels hiding. I'm just saying what I was seeing down these streets like in Wakanda was going on. In American Wakanda, that's all it. Okay, I heard a lot of kind of homeless people going on. You go out there, you can do a lot of stuff. Cardi, ain't no need to be bored. Jamie Foxx. Child, we don't know what's going on with Jamie Foxx. 1 minute Jamie Foxx is one way, 1 minute he another way, 1 minute he was, I mean, they've been told all kind of, I don't even know what, I can't tell y'all what's going on with Jamie Foxx. I have no clue. They say Jamie Foxx is blind now. They say somebody even said they thought he might have been faking the whole thing so he didn't have to testify in that court case. I was a child. It was all kind of rumors out here. I don't know what to believe about Jamie Foxx. But according to RadarOnline.com, it says Jamie Foxx left paralyzed and blind from blood clot in the brain suffered after COVID vaccine. Now, I don't actually believe it was the actual, this is my personal opinion, okay? Now, they say the vaccine can affect various people different ways, okay? That's just any vaccination. But, you know, y'all know how I am about these vaccines. I know I was up here talking about that I am legend and all that stuff and, you know, everything like that, okay? However, I don't know if Jamie has had several boosters on top of boosters on top of boosters on top of boosters if this story is true, and maybe it was a booster. I don't know, but it says Jamie Foxx, and I'm hearing a lot of stories like this about people having a lot of things, and side effects from the boosters and stuff. Okay, but it says Jamie Foxx suffered a blood clot in his brain, leaving him partially paralyzed and blind, and has been sensationally claimed. In a dramatic turn of events surrounding the megastar's mysterious illness, veteran Hollywood journalist AJ Benza has revealed a supposed well-placed source telling him Foxx, 55, suffered a serious medical episode after being pressured into getting a COVID vaccine. That's terrible. Jamie had a blood clot in his brain after he got the shot. He did not want the shot, but the movie he was on, he was pressured to get it, said the producer, a former New York Daily News columnist and host of the E-series Mysteries and Scandals. The blood clot in the brain caused him at that point to be partially paralyzed and blind. Benza insisted his source is someone in the room connected to Foxx treatment, okay? RadarOnline.com has not been able to independently verify Benza's reporting. A spokesperson for Foxx has not responded to our request for comment. Listen, this is according to RadarOnline.com. I don't know what's going on with Jamie Foxx. Next week, y'all, first he was playing pickleball at home. Then he was down, he was in some, what's some place in Chicago, rehab center in Chicago. Now he's blind and paralyzed. I don't know. Next week, he might be playing football and getting ready for any given Sunday. I don't know. Y'all got so many stories out here, and I blame, I'm going to tell you seriously, I'm blame. I know the family's going through some stuff, and y'all trying to keep privacy, but when it's this many stories and this much fiction and all this stuff, get a family spokesperson. No, shit. Get a family spokesperson and come out here and clear some of this stuff out. Crazy. Now, next week, he's going to be out here. They're going to say they saw him at the pool hall shooting pool. I mean, they're going to say all kinds of stuff. Okay? Get the story. Just time to stop all these fun about Jamie, for real. Man. Ain't there people trying to be nosy? People don't leave y'all to y'all business. Put a family spokesperson out and say, hey, he's doing, this is what's happening right now. Show him, let him show up on one of the major TV shows. Tyler, the family spokesperson, give an update. And they go on about y'all business. God, how much till Jamie get well and see you back out here? It's a lot. It's a lot of stuff going on. Pickleballs, there's all kinds of stuff. It's kind of crazy. I mean, it's been wild. Stories are just getting wilder. I don't know. Haley Berry wins a big in a decade-long child support battle with Gabriel Aubrey. Did she win big? It took a decade. So this is according to MSN.com. Says, Haley Berry has reportedly managed to cap the amount of additional child support she has to pay Gabriel Aubrey after a decade-long legal battle. The 56-year-old monster ball actress shares Nala, 15, with ex-boyfriend Gabriel Aubrey and her son, Lacey O'Teen, with ex-husband Oliver Martinez. Following Haley and Gabrielle split, the pair was embroiled in a legal battle after a judge reportedly ruled in 2015 that she paid $16,000 per month in child support to her boyfriend. It ain't even her husband, child. Holly Berry got finessed. Okay, now according to Daily Bill, Haley is managed to cap the additional battle at $4.5 million in total. Haley shall continue to pay Gabrielle 4.3% of any income she receives. And I think he only got the kid part-time. Well, above $1.95 million has additional child support for Nala. However, any additional payments of child support pursuant to this paragraph shall not exceed $109,000 per year. Listen, let me just say this. He got all the money he wanted to. They was arguing back and forth. Even Holly Berry one time claimed that this man might be racist. And I said, boo, how you have a full, whole baby with a racist? I don't want to hear your story, Holly Berry. No, I actually thought the child support, I ain't going to do men get it all the time. I actually thought she was kind of messed up or funny. Listen here. You know, there's some people in life you question about racial stuff. I ain't hate Holly Berry's business, but I am a little bit. It's just strange to me. Holly Berry's married to David Justice. What's her name? Who else is she married to? Eric Benet. With Wesley Snipes. Engaged to Christopher Williams. I mean, she never had a baby. She never had no baby. She never had no baby. And then Holly Berry, these two white men come along who seem like, just my opinion, no offense, seem kind of like losers. And then she's all pregnant and she's all this and that and this and that. And then suddenly she ready to call somebody a racist and all this stuff because she wasn't discerning about who she should have the baby with. Yeah, I don't know. I like Holly Berry, but I am going to speak the truth. I'm glad she was Van, what's the name down here? Hell, dude. Van Hunt. Yes, I'm glad. But I'm just trying to figure it out. I mean, Holly Berry, I just wonder what the racial dynamic in her head, like how she sees race and stuff. Girl, I'm kind of curious about that because I do wonder, hey, how you not have no way to take justice? I just wonder. Now, maybe this was time, okay? It's just curious to me. And then when you get these two men, they seem to have a lot of problems, allegedly. Alleged losers, or not losers, alleged. Okay, from what they were saying out in these streets and these articles. It seemed like when she called, when she was talking about she was calling me in the spirit of Dorothy Dandridge, did Dorothy Dandridge spirit literally jump in and start picking the men? I don't know. Let me check. It's getting late. See, this was Carlotta, this is why. I apologize ahead of time if I should ever become, if this show gets bigger. I apologize for anything I say that is wrong or insincere. I apologize that I should sometimes just say too much. So you're so, before y'all blackball me, before I even get up there. Well, listen, I'm just curious. I'm going to ask you some hard questions because I really want to know. Can we discuss this? I'd ask for a hand sign. Can we discuss it? Because it's an interesting point. It's something I want to really hear your answers to. I mean, I really would. How did that happen? Like, how did these two dudes, you end up having babies, especially Gabrielle Aubrey, and then you end up paying him $16,000 and allegedly was going to fight Eric Benet like a dog. Get some child, get some support. Allegedly, that's what I heard in these streets. I just want to know. I just got a lot of questions. I'm nosy. I just be watching out here, pop culture and celebrity movies, just trying to figure it all out. Yeah, I thought, okay, you have stuff happens out this year. I just want to know. It's just interesting. Like, oh my God. What's the next story? Help us. Okay, there's a woman, child. She's 123 years old, and this woman looks good. Okay? For 123. I at least saw Sister's 85. Because she looks damn good, okay? This is from newtelegraph.com. 123-year-old Kenya woman identified as Teresa Narasa Jamba has revealed that she turned down many men in her youth because of the culture that forbids seeing women with men and allows women to be introduced to their family. But her family never introduced her. Okay. Teresa, who was still a virgin and never had a sexual relationship with a man till her old age, revealed that she was looking for the right man whom she would share a special connection with. Unfortunately, she could not get one. Now, I wonder, my astrologist would say she got some Virgo in her truck. my favorite astrologer, she always said, Virgo bitches always making wild decisions. I feel lucky. But she even tell me with my Virgo. She said, yep, that's a Virgo shit. But New Telegraph gathered that at the time, Teresa was ready for marriage. Age was no longer on her side because she was already too old to be attracted to men. According to her, she might have had children during her youth days if she had been sexually intimate with a man. She added that she is still hopeful to find a male companion at 123 years old because she is tired of living a boring and lonely life. Can she get some young teens out there? Is there some 80-year-olds that want to get down? Okay. I never had a husband in my entire life. Yes, of course, I'm still a virgin. I would think of it during my era, but I won't take myself to any husband. My name is Teresa Naraka Jamba. I've seen the nakedness of a man. I've never seen the nakedness of a man. Oh, she like a BV. You know what I'm saying? For 120 years, I lived with an unfulfilled desire, a deviant hope, and a courageous spirit of waiting that one day a man will emerge and embrace my soul. At the moment, you can help me and bring me a man. When I was young, I didn't want to associate with men, and that prevented me from any potential relationship. I never developed love for any man. Oh, this is I'm joking, but this is sad. Hey, this is sad. 123 years old, and you know, like I know it's some 90-year-olds that want to get down. Now, listen, if you ain't had no pins in that long, first of all, she looked good. See, she's living to 123 and no man problem. I mean, we look like, wow, baby, it was the way to go. But, you know, can some 90-year-old kick her down? Some 85-year-old get down on these streets, a nice older woman out here? want some loving before the before it all goes to the, you know, before it ends. Come through, knock some cobwebs off. I mean, lots of 120 fucking three. Wow. What a story, but she looks good. 123-year-old version. That's wild. That's pretty deep. Now, I've heard, I've heard a 40-year-old, 50-year-old, but 123, and she looked good, okay? I'm just saying, what does that say to you? Oh, my God, the last story is Blueface. Don't give them. Tell women they should expect to be cheated on. Blueface has been caught getting a lot of attention recently, and very little of it is positive. The saga featuring him and Christian Rock continues. Most recently, Blueface took Jaden Lexus on a date, his other baby mama, and told her she could look after his and Rock's baby. Then there was a viral clip of him harassing a woman at a nightclub. Furthermore, his mama trying to start a beef with Erykah Badu. Just a lot of things going on that aren't music for the rapper. Seemingly not tired of attention, Blueface took to Twitter to give out some relationship advice. More specifically, Blueface warned women that they should expect to be cheated on because Beyonce was cheated on. Truly a relationship guru at work. The tweets were bizarre, misguided, and just straight up cringe. At the very least, Twitter is having fun roasting him for it. And this is according to hotnewhiphop.com, that article. It says, if Beyonce got cheated on, bitch, then you getting cheated on. Say you ain't even got half to offer a bitch, okay? Blueface sounded off with a series of tweets on June 3rd, okay? I'm speaking for all women. Be for real. Came the follow-up. Ain't no female better than Beyonce. Ain't no nigga richer than Jay-Z. You get the point, Blueface added. The truth could never be a diss, the rapper concluded. Earlier in the day, Blueface retweeted a tweet from Jalen and Alexis that read, addicted to dick. I got ass. Listen, let me just check. First of all, Jay-Z ain't oh, Lord. Listen, first of all, these men say crazy things, okay? First of all, a lot of you men ain't Jay-Z, okay? And ain't got no Jay-Z money. So you can't expect people to just accept your infidelity. You ain't shit. And I don't think you should accept this is Jay-Z shit. And Beyonce, I don't know Beyonce. I don't know what she offering over there. Just because she can sing and dance, I mean, she got a lot to offer and she's cheap. Yeah, these niggas, that's the problem with dudes like Blueface, okay? That's why he's out here confused, because that's what he did. That's how he look at. All he's looking at is the outside. And he ain't making no music. You don't hear no music from Blueface. Blueface out here doing reality TV, okay? He is not smart. Well, he's smart because he got everybody paying attention to him. But he's not doing anything lasting, and he don't pick women. Yeah, like, I ain't saying this about Beyonce, but he ain't looking at the deeper things of Beyonce. I don't know what Beyonce is. I don't know who Beyonce. Beyonce might be a shell, like a pretty empty shell over there. Okay? So just because Beyonce getting cheated on don't mean I expect to, because I ain't no empty shell. I got a lot. Okay? But then sometimes it doesn't mean women, that's not reason people cheat. People cheat, like I said, for various reasons, men and women. Okay, but this nut, if y'all letting Blueface give y'all some advice, please. And I don't understand who you chicks are that's letting Blueface do all this crazy stuff. Y'all got real, true low self-esteem problems, okay? He's a fool. I'll be like, what are your record? How you going to be talking? I don't know how long that reality TV money's gonna last, especially if Krishan gets some common sense up in these streets. Because she really the money. Her presence on TV, she really the star of the show. I mean, what you gonna do if her coin, if she don't? Okay, then you gonna try to put some music, ain't nobody gonna wanna hear you then. I'm like, what? I don't know what song he do. Is he the one that used to say he was a Blueface was a dude that used to say he was a fuss? I think he was the one. I'm not sure. But I'm not surprised by Blueface out here. Sometimes you got to do the work. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to get in the studio. Sometimes you got to get in. You got to stop screwing around and playing around and doing all this crazy stuff and living off recoupment money and reality TV show dollars and Zeus checks. And you got to go in there and start to really build your empire. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is building a little bit of empire, but how long can it last? You know? I mean, are you really a rapper, or are you just a weirdo that just got on TV and people want to see your weird-ass life? I don't know. You know? It's weird. It's strange. We live in strange times like nowadays where Blueface is a relationship guru. It's a scary place. It's a scary time frame we're living in out here. I don't even know. The world is, I wake up every day and I be like, God, is the title sound man outside? It's wild around here. It's just strange. Strange world. I'm going to leave that with some good news. Angel Reese. She's been doing it. That girl been expanding her empire, been on videos, everything. The girl from LSU. Great. Oh, I forgot to talk about Tina Turner, y'all, that they getting ready to do the Tina Turner Museum. I forgot about that. Tina Turner's widow are planning to transform their 76 million Swiss estate into a museum. This is according to MSN.com, okay? It's saying that Tina Turner's widow is reportedly transforming $76 million Swiss estate where she died into a museum dedicated to her life and work. Facility the best singer whose death, age 83, was confirmed on May 21st after she had battled health woes for years. By her sprawling 10-building waterfront retreat that overlooks Lake Zurich in 2021 with her husband, Aaron Batch, 67. Swiss newspaper Blick claims it may now be used to showcase memorabilia from the superstar career. They doing her like Prince. They ain't playing no games. They ready to roll out the – he already getting ready to open up the museum. The museum probably going to be open up like Prince. Remember with Prince? It was probably like 3 to 4, 3 to 6 months, wasn't it? It was quick. It was quick. You an entertainer. You going to be working in death. They're going to be putting your name to work in death. Okay, Tina. Tina ain't even barely got in the ground here. She just now probably entering the process of the pearly gate. The angels probably still sitting at the going to Tina. Nah, it's a day. What they say, a day is 1,000 years with the Lord. But listen, Tina just getting good up and comfortable up here, wherever she at. And y'all up here ready to make a museum. Wow. It's a wild world. He's already saying, I got to put up you. We about to put a museum. We going to put this memorabilia up. We going to do all of this, okay? All right, Tina about to go to work. That name about to work in death, okay? Hey, let me just hear you. And she had a young husband, 267 old Tina, 83 out in the streets. Yeah, okay. I see him. He said, hey, I'm about to live off this Tina Turner money. I ain't mad at you, bro. I know you probably hurting stuff, too. But you're getting that museum up, too. He learned it from Prince's people. Prince's. Michael Jackson's people was the only one slow. Michael Jackson's people was up there talking, we can't, we can get the meat. Oh, they won't let us in this county. They should have put Neverland. I would have had Michael Jackson buried at Neverland. I would have had fans coming in today. Michael Jackson's the only estate that didn't do the smart thing, in my opinion. But, you know, who am I? All right, you guys, let's come to the end of the show. Man, thank y'all for hanging out and listening to me rant about pop culture and listen to my opinion on all this stuff. Y'all are amazing, okay? Remember, you can help me. Remember, you can listen to the show. I mean, get updates about the show by following the show on Blog Talk Radio, okay? All right, so I'm going to leave out with one of my favorite songs by Jamiroquai because it's June. 7 days in sunny June. It's the CC Show. I'm Carlotta. Y'all have a wonderful week, okay? I'm out. See y'all.
The path I choose for me. there's a magic I can hold. Yes, I love how they go, and that you never see to be in short supply.
Listeners, hey, thank you guys for listening to me. Whatever you're doing while you're at work, or you are cleaning up the house, washing dishes, or you out driving around, whatever you're doing, listen, I appreciate y'all so much. Thank you guys, and thanks for being patient while I'm trying to work on, you know, my new show. I'm going to do a show this week, a record a show this week for the other platform. I'll let y'all know when the show is put up. But thank you guys for being patient with me. Remember, you can hit me up on the Carlotta Chatwood Facebook page, okay? You can hit me up on Carlotta Chatwood Facebook page. You can also hit me up on Twitter. There's two Twitter accounts. There's C Chatwood Show, which is the one I'm on mostly, and then there's a spare account, the Carlotta 72, okay? And then my Instagram is Carly's_Galassy. That's Carly's with an S, okay? And you know what? I posted something on my Facebook pages and stuff. I'm constantly posting on the Carlotta Chatwood Facebook page when I have a show for y'all, because I'm doing, you know, to let y'all know what I'm going to talk about. But sometimes on my Instagram pages, on my Twitter pages, sometimes I'm not as active because I got a lot going on right now. So, okay. So, y'all, please be patient with me, all right? Please be patient with me, all right? Thank you guys again so much for listening. I appreciate y'all. Really, I really do. I hope y'all have a wonderful, exciting rest of your week, okay? Be blessed, y'all. I am out. I'll see y'all. Have a good one. We're going to leave out with Korean Bailey Way, one of my favorites, closer. CC Show, I'm Carlotta. I'm out. Have a good night, y'all.
I don't want to give you up. I don't want to hold you up. I don't want ambiguous. I just know that I've had enough. I want you to travel with me. Let it loose and let your mind go free. Show you things that you never see. But you just got to go.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.